If Lambs Could Kill, featuring Knife City, A Quickness, Bright, and Hot Sauce.
Welcome to If Lambs Could Kill, episode 5.5? I'm Knife City.
I'm A Quickness. Hot Sauce.
And you guys are going to have to talk a little bit louder, because I am so fucking excited about this next set. I don't know why, but these gods... Okay, obviously, we're going to be talking about the fucking spoilers. If you don't know what a spoiler is, it's they release the information of the cards coming up in the next set, which is Journey into Nyx. And that's what we're going to be talking about. Let's just get right the fuck into it. You might be able to tell that we don't have Reich with us today. He's on a very important mission. He's getting the band back together. He's on a mission from God. So don't worry about that.
Like the top man he was talking about last episode? Yeah, that's him right now.
Yeah.
Top men, Lois.
Top men. So we're going to be talking about the spoilers. This is just a spoiler episode. We're not going to be dropping any noob knowledge and none of that.
No deck techs.
No deck techs. So let's just hop right into it. I don't care what's been going on in your lives this past week. What about these fucking gods? I'm so excited. These gods seem better than the ones in Born of the Gods. Consensus?
I agree.
Yeah, Quickness brought up a good point that the first gods had an activated ability and, like, the other static ability. Yeah. And then the Born gods had one static ability, and these ones have two static abilities. So, like, it, in theory, has to be better, right? Twice the abilities, double.
Exactly.
More is better. Wait, what was the question?
We're just saying about like how the Journey and the Nyx gods are so much better than the previous gods.
No, I don't agree with that.
You don't?
No. Doubles were definitely worse.
No, the multicolored gods.
No, there's too many abilities. It's worse. I don't like it. I remember back in my day, we only had one ability.
So, what do you mean, like, they have two static abilities? Oh, I didn't even read the second part of Irois. Okay, so let's go through these.
Jeez,
let's settle down.
We'll start with the newest one. Athreus?
Athreos.
Athreos? See, I'm never going to say that.
Athreos.
Yeah. Athreos. Okay, indestructible, blah, blah. Okay, 3 mana. 1 colorless, white, black. Orzhov, yada, yada. Whenever another creature you own dies, return it to your hand unless target opponent pays 3 life. It's kind of nice because you can choose the opponent. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice if all opponents, but that's okay.
Yeah.
That's great. What do you guys think? It's a 5/4. What do you guys think? 3 mana.
I think it's unfair that it's 3 fucking mana.
I think it's fantastic.
Okay, so the first thing when I read it, I thought of Hot Sauce's fucking festering newt brew that he has. Dude, this is ridiculous.
This is perfect for it.
This, if you don't know, listen to our old podcast, but it's basically Festering Newt, and then you sack him to Bubbling Cauldron, and there's other cool combos and shit going on, but Jesus Christ, this is going to be redonkulous for that deck.
Exactly. The Festering Newt will normally, if I sacrifice him to the Cauldron, my opponent loses 4 life, each opponent loses 4 life, and I gain life that way. So normally they lose 4, I gain 4. But now, when he dies, he gets to choose, do I lose 7? Or do I give him that card back and let him do the combo all over again? So basically, they're gonna take 7 each time. And that's okay, because when he dies, I can go ahead and bring him back with all the other spells I have. Mm-hmm. And the person's gonna have to choose to take 7 each turn. If they don't, they're gonna be taking 8 each turn, or 4, then 7 the next turn, or whatever. So, for this one example, it's amazing.
It might even... Yeah. I'm seeing some applications for the Junk Reanimator deck. Junk is green, black, white, mm-hmm. correct?
Yep.
And so I see some applications for that, not necessarily with the whip, but just other ways to bring cards back. You could just constantly bring back your fucking huge-ass bombs and just abuse the shit out of them.
Obzadat's never going away. Obzadat's here to stay.
Oh, that's great.
Until rotation.
Oh, it's so great. It's so great.
So, what do you think, Quick? What do you think about Athreos?
I think it's good. Like you were saying, I see a home in Junk Reanimator, definitely. It's because you know, it's all about, you don't really care if your creature's dead or not, because you can just bring them back anyways, and a lot of times they have good benefits coming into the battlefield as well. So I think as soon as Athyros is played, it becomes like a race situation, where it's like, I have to kill you without killing your creatures, or else I'm going to die regardless.
Right, and you're going to be paying 3 life most of the time, I think. I don't think you're going to be keep letting shit go back to the hand. Like, you just killed it. You want it to be dead. What the fuck?
Yeah, well, even in, like, a reanimator strategy, like, I don't think whether they pay the life or not is going to really matter, because their things are going to be coming back anyways. So it's like, kind of pick your poison.
Yeah.
Do you want to lose 3 life? Or, so like, you pay the 3 life, it goes to your graveyard, and I'm just going to bring it back again.
That's true.
You know what I
mean?
Well, you better start doing a pacifism. But
you can do like a, not an endless loop, but like, so when I bring shit back from the graveyard in my little, just my brew reanimator deck, like once they kill it off, then like, I don't know, it's usually like, I blew my wad, you know, like, you know, my tricks are out or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you could just, like, I see a cycle with back to your hand, and then you discard it to Lotlith Troll, and then you bring it back again, and then it's just like this endless loop with it.
Yeah, that's perfect. All these decks, that, just like what you said, that deck has everything it needs to make this card work perfectly and just cycle it all around, any direction it wants to go.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, what, okay. I don't know if this is going to work. I need you guys' feedback.
Nah.
What if, like, a one of or two of in my humans deck? Because not almost everything, but a lot of things are double costed, like one and two white, one and two black.
You could activate it, probably.
Yeah, I could.
It's probably a good chance you can activate it.
I could get it online, but then also, you know, it's an aggro deck, so once my creatures die, I kind of, like, run out of gas.
That's probably why it's so aggressively costed.
It wants to go in, like, probably, an aggressive.
Some people might think it deserves to be in an aggro strategy. There is, because there also is mono black aggro, which is fine for this, splashing a little bit of white maybe to get it on there. And then there's mono white, and there's Orzhov. There's all those are very aggro, and white's always been aggro. But that might be why they costed it at 3, because they want you to put it in that deck. Maybe? No? Why would it be a 3, you know? They don't need it to be 3 if it's just going to be for a mid-range deck.
The cost, like, I'm not sure about, like, the cost of why it's costed so low quite yet. In regards to Knife City's Humans deck, I don't know if it's something exactly you're going to be wanting to run unless you expect it just to be an enchantment the rest of the time, because my whole thinking is you're trying to play off Zankrit Necromancer, and, you know, pretty much suiciding your guys, or if you don't care if they die, just to get the zombies. And when you do that, your whole strategy kind of takes it away from trying to turn the god online to being a creature.
Well, I don't...
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't care about turning the god online.
Yeah, you like, don't have to. Yeah, I understand.
I'm just saying in regards to turning them online, that's right. Why I'm saying you're going to kind of want to play a role as more of an enchantment.
Definitely. Like, okay, what I think of these gods in standard play is their enchantments. And then maybe sometimes they're creatures.
Except for Thassa. Thassa, you want to be a creature.
Yeah, well,
Mono Blue would not be as strong as it was if you couldn't get Thassa online early. And
with the mono colored gods, it's, I don't know, maybe a little bit easier to get them online, maybe. Yeah. But so when I look at these gods, they're mostly for their enchantment side, and then, you know, best case scenario, they can turn into a creature. But I don't, most of the time, I don't give a shit if they turn into a creature. But with this, like, if I suicide my guys and, you know, they turn into zombies, they go back to my hand, or they take damage, more damage. So aggro deck, more damage, Or I get more guys to turn into zombies, So either way, but I think a one of or a two of, I don't want, like, build the deck around, like, redo the whole deck around him.
If you had a board enchantment, a player enchantment, you wouldn't run 4 of them anyways, you'd run 1 or 2.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you had a Sanguine Bond, you'd run, like, 1, maybe 2 if you needed it to come out. But I mean, that's what, it's the same thing as that.
There's some decks that run, you know, 3 copies of a god or something, because they really want to get it out there.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, it would be nice if I could get Aetherios out there, but I don't, it's, my whole deck isn't centered around getting him out there.
Yeah.
But it's fucking awesome if he does get out.
All right, my boner's hurting my pants, so you need to my pants are hurting my boner, I should say. So let's move on. Let's move on to the next one. Keranos, God of Storms. Mm-hmm. 3 blue, red. Of course, same old jargon on it. It's a 6/5. Reveal the first card you draw on each of your turns. Whenever you reveal a land card this way, draw a card. So you draw the land. Cool. A little card advantage. Whenever you reveal a non-land card this way, Keranos does 3 damage to target creature or player. So Mogus is out. Even though they're different colors, you might still use Mogus. But this, you can choose 3 to a creature or a player instead of just someone losing 2 life.
Or...
And it's card advantage, and I think it's just
this.
Just sick.
Okay, so Mogus is for, like, I feel like a creature heavy deck.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This is
not going to come
is
online.
For is it?
Yeah.
This is it's never going to
come
online.
Never
going to
come online, right.
And it doesn't fucking matter. Like, this is what is it wants to do. First of all, you get to fucking, you know, if you draw a land card, you get to draw a card. So that's awesome. You know, just don't get stuck drawing lands because. You know, if Izzet doesn't have shit to cast, then it gets kind
of
fucked.
But you could it's a lot of scry effects that Izzet could have, you know what I mean? It's a lot of that, a lot of blue-red shit that scries. So
yeah,
you can get those lands the fuck out of the way and do 3 damage each turn.
Or you could just leave, like, 1 land on top and then another card underneath.
Yeah.
So you can draw the land and the spell.
That's true.
You know what
That's
I mean?
That's true.
But, I mean, I think this is exactly what Izzet needed. Like, blue-red, you know, there's maybe lots of iterations and different styles of play with blue red, but like what is it wanted to do as a guild in Return to Ravnica? It was a spell slinger, instant sorcery, totally based off of all of that. And I think this is exactly what it wants to do. I mean, let's turn it over to Quickness, you got the Is It intro deck, and that kind of formed your style of play, so what do you think?
He's gonna find a perfect home in my American Control deck, pretty much. Cause lots of lands, lots of spells and instants. It's gonna play well with, like, all the enchantments that are gonna be in there, like the Detention Sphere, Assemble the Legion. So, you know, you could have, like, 2 Detention Spheres and Assemble, plus the God, and he's online. So, that's not, like, hard to achieve. And, you know, like I was saying, you have a bunch of instants, and you have some sorceries in there, so you're gonna reliably get 3 damage, you know, pretty much every turn, almost. It is land-heavy, it does run 27 lands, so... You also are going to draw a bunch of cards, which is what the deck wants to do.
Which is fine, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Pulling up a land, you're not going to be like, oh man, a land. I mean, you get to keep that land and then draw another card or whatever.
And so I can keep the land and I can draw Sphinx's Rev. And then, you know, I can rev from there. Or I can, you know, draw land and I can pull my Assemble and then play the Assemble of the Legion and then turn the God online and then I'm good to go from there. But I think it's going to be really good. It's definitely what is it wants. It's, you know... throughout Magic's history, is it the blue-red combinations have been kind of top tier throughout any format, and blue-red is more about tempo and burn, and that's exactly what I think this provides. You pull an instant of sorcery, you kill one of the creatures, and you can kill another creature with a burn spell, and then you can get through. Or, you know, you can use the God activation to kill a creature, and then you can burn their face. And then you can use, like, a Seder Fire Dancer, you know, in conjunction with this to kill another creature on top of it.
Yeah,
so,
it's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it's... I'm really excited for this god. Obviously, it's my color combination that I like the most next to Azorius. So, yeah, I can't wait to play this guy. He's going to be awesome.
Of course we don't have Farika, God of Affliction, yet. I swear, like, Wizards knows, like, what cards I'm looking forward to the most, and they're like, we're going to spoil that last. Same with Phoenix, which just broke my heart anyways.
Wasn't Erebos the last one, too, and Theros?
Erebos, yeah. I was most excited. It was last. Phoenix, last, and, of course, Frieka, last. So we don't know that one yet. I'm excited to find out what it is, though. Hopefully next week. But the next one is... Which I think is the worst. Eroist God of Victory.
It's, the worst as in you don't like it? Like, you think it's going to be the shittiest?
I think it's going to be the shittiest god. I mean, I'm fingers crossed Farika is not worse than this. But it's two red and white. It's a 7/4. Creatures you control can't be blocked except by two or more creatures. Prevent all damage that would be dealt to attacking creatures you control. Okay, so, tell you the truth, I didn't read that second part until just now. So I didn't know about the prevent all damage to attacking creatures. But still, I don't know if this is exactly what Red-White wants to do.
I think, I agree with you in a sense that Red-White's problem is not attacking and doing all that nonsense. It's just like staying alive and having like a good army is like what's the fragile part of like a Red-White thing. So this is not helping protect anything except for like the attack. So yeah, you could do attack, but I don't know. I feel like this is only good in a very specific deck, which is going to be just like aggressive to mid-range Red-White.
I don't even think like aggressive would want it. Like it's more of a mid-range.
Mid-range, but still, like things are just only turning sideways type shit. You know, not a lot of other stuff going on, and it's only thing it's good for really. There's like you can't like just splash this into other decks and think that it's going to do anything. It's not going to do shit for the except for the one strategy that it. You're reading that and it sounds like one thing, and that's all it's going to be good for. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the. I don't know. There's already other cards that do these same things.
Like, there's that, fucking, what was it, red-green enchantment from the Return to Ravnica block, where attacking creatures get +1/+1 and can't be attacked, or can't be blocked by two or more creatures.
Well, Madcap skills is also +3/+0.
Same thing. But I mean, like, this seems like that enchantment, but worse, almost. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I would almost prefer the Return to Ravnica enchantment or Madcap skills.
Mm-hmm.
This seems like too little, too late, almost.
Yeah, I think Madcap skills is like, as long as that's still around, that's like, it's kind of weird to say that, like, to compare the two, but you kind of can't. I feel like you can. That's more important. I'd rather just be putting that on our creatures
especially,
and get the job done by turn four or five.
Especially putting it on a heroic creature so it triggers the heroic at the same time.
Yeah.
Put Madcap skills on it.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't play Red-White, but this is, I wouldn't, like, be excited to, oh, I want to go play Red-White just because of this god. Like, nah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is that if this could work out maybe for the, like, the Naya Hexproof type stuff, because your creatures are already protected and now they can, like, get in regardless, and you're going to prevent damage from, like, instant sorcery stuff to your creatures, but you're not going to be able to attack in every time because you're afraid of it dying to, like, your opponent's party tricks and stuff like that. That's what I get afraid of if I attack in with my 3/3 hexproof, whatever. Like, is it okay? Like, I know they can't burn me, but, like, are they gonna... they're gonna be like, okay, I'll block, and then they fucking pull out a card, and that thing's dead, and my strategy's gone.
Hmm.
Now they can't do that, because it's prevent all damage during that turn. So I can see it maybe for something that like that. That'll be a little bonus. But for the aggressive red-white normal strategy, I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised if somebody like made it work somehow. Like it's not,
yeah.
It's not a terrible fucking.
No,
magic
reading
card.
It sounded good, but
yeah.
When you apply to like what, meta, you're like, man, I don't know.
And especially when you see all the other gods, like it's just the one I'm least excited about.
Yeah.
But you know, hopefully somebody can break.
I think it's tied with the next one though, as far as being it reads pretty nice, but is it going to fit in our meta? I don't know.
On paper, I think. This one actually isn't the worst. We'll have to see how it plays out. I actually think that it will be good in a Boros aggressive strategy, because it provides you that extra reach. Your opponent's gonna be low by turn 4 or 5 when this guy comes out, and this gives it so that you can preserve your board state and still attack in to their creatures.
Why preserve your board state?
Because, when you want to be attacking. The whole thing is you want to be attacking. It's an aggressive strategy. You want to get in as many points of damage as early as possible. And by the time you hit 4 or 5, their cards are better quality in general, meaning that they could play like a Pelucranos, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're 2/2 or you're 3/3. You just can't attack into it profitably
right.
Without dying. This way it allows it to get in, and even if they have enough creatures to block one of them, it won't die. So you can kind of preserve your board state there, outside of, you know, like a Doomblade or Hero's Downfall or things like that. And even then, they can't, fire off an instant speed removal spell while in combat because it's preventing all damage.
Right.
So, which is good. I just think it provides that little extra reach to get in there and get those few points of damage. And I think it'll be good. It doesn't have the drawback like Madcap Skills has.
Yeah.
Where you can get blown out, where you're gonna try to enchant your Madcap Skills and they kill the guy you're trying to enchant it with.
Right.
Which is, you know, nowadays with all the removal spells out in the format, it's pretty reliable to do. You know, you have Bioblight, you have Doomblade, you can downfall stuff, you know, you have all those types of spells you can use. And, you know, I think it just adds a little bit more. It doesn't really do too much in, like, a mid-range strategy, just because I feel that your card selection going later game is of better quality or on par with any other late-game strategy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to do well until rotation, because the current Boros is little creatures, a lot of burn. So why would you even care about your creatures getting through, you know, like the whole, like, Brent's Burnation deck, or Reich's deck he was talking about. I don't know who that is. I don't think, like, he would play that, and that's the most effective red-white deck
right
now, I think.
I say that.
So, like Justin was saying, like, or Jesus Christ.
God.
This guy next to me was saying, quickness, that it might be good, but not... Not right now, I don't think.
I do think that if anything, this is going to be the one we might be wrong about. That's what I feel like. This is like one of those that it sounds simple enough, but it might be like a huge staple. Where the rest of them, I think I feel like we're pretty good on calling out the other ones, saying that they are going to be good and not going to be good. This one, I'm just not really too sure about. So,
yeah.
Okay, so. The next one, Krufix, God of Horizons. 3, green, blue. It's a 4/7. You have no maximum hand size. If unused mana would empty from your mana pool, that mana becomes colorless instead. So, it doesn't really affect the board right away.
It doesn't.
If it's a creature, maybe, but for the most part, it's not affecting the board right away. And so, but I just have this feeling that there's going to be, like, this crazy, like, just Simic, like, combo, evolve,
with profit,
crazy,
and everything else.
Like, what's the dude when he comes into play, you draw cards equal to the power of the Prime greatest
Speaker.
Creature? Yeah, Prime Speaker Zagana, and I just have a feeling, like, I'm not going to be the one to break it, but somebody's going to break it, and it's going to be really fucking good. But as of right now, like, it's... not the one I'm most excited about.
I do agree that it does, when it comes out, it's not doing shit. And if you want to use the second ability where you get to store your tap mana as colorless, if you guys aren't like familiar with what that means, from what I understand, is that if it's like your turn ends and you have some mana left over, then you have maybe like a counter spell in your hand, and you're watching your opponent on their turn to see what they do. All right, they don't do anything. You didn't use your counter. You have 2 mana left over. Go ahead and tap those mana at the end of his turn, his or her turn, and it becomes 2 colorless floating mana forever until you want to use it. And then you can just do that and spend extra mana.
Oh, dude, I didn't even think about that. Oh my god!
But the thing is, I agree though that it. So, like, say that happens. You bring this thing guy out on turn 5 or whatever, best case, or maybe turn 4 if you got ramp, and then you can tap some stuff, but you're wasting turns. And so you're gonna think like, okay, I don't wanna bring out my next 5 drop because I want to reserve mana for a turn ahead or two, and that's gonna fuck up the tempo of your deck. You're gonna have this, like, confliction in your own head, thinking like, oh, I wanna, like, I'll cast this, like, Witch Shocker, it costs 3, and I'll tap these 2 mana and float them for later, because then I can use, like, 7 or 9 mana later. And it's gonna just, like, slow you down. So you're gonna, on turn 5, you're bringing this guy, it does nothing. Turn 6, you might also be nothing, because you're going to be, like, worried, and you want to use it on... You want to start stacking up mana like crazy. So, what you said in the beginning is what I totally agree about this card, is that when it brings it out, I'm not going to go, ooh, shit, this turn I'm dead. Yeah. No, that's going to happen. Later on the line, okay, fine, but there's already decks that... Like the control stuff. If it already gets to turn 9 or 10, I'm not worried about this fucking creature staying up there. I'm worried about goddamn Elspeth and all the other stuff coming about and fucking my world up. So, yeah. I don't know.
Like you were saying about the whole control thing, I think it'll fit nicely in there, because the whole thing, with counter spells is that the counter spells get better the longer they go, but you lose a lot of tempo holding it into your hand. Mm-hmm. You keep it in your hand. So you're leaving up mana. They don't do anything. So you're sitting there. It's like, okay, well, I didn't advance my board state. I didn't really do anything, which really hurts me, even though holding the counterspell is better. This way, I think it's really good, and it's going to get a lot of people if it's played in a control strategy, because I don't think they're going to realize you have the mana stored, and you can tap out. Say, I'm going to tap out for an Elspeth. Okay, so I tap out. I play Elspeth. You go in. You're going to downfall it. Well, I kept 3 mana stored in the bank, and now I can counterspell it, and you're going to run it out because you see me tapped out.
Yeah, but you know you can't do it tapped out. You still have to have a proper basic land out to get that dispel or whatever online.
Okay, well, actually 2. I can leave so 2, or I can, you can do some.
You can trick it, though. Yeah, you can negate like it for 1/1. There's certain ways around it.
Isn't there that green-blue counterspell to where you gain the mana?
Plasm Capture.
Yeah, Plasm Capture.
We talked about it last podcast that it's awesome, but it's also hard as fuck to cast and keep 4 mana open a whole turn.
I mean, with this...
It's a dick hair.
With this...
Well, because you gotta remember, it's colorless now, so you can't...
No, but I mean, when you cast Plasm Capture, and then you get the mana the next turn...
Right.
And so you could just fucking bring out some crazy shit the next turn, you know what I mean? Like, it's like...
But what besides Worldspire Worm, realistically, what are you going to be able to sink in 12 mana to that's going to be, like, awesome on one turn without wasting it?
Two awesome 6-drops?
Yeah, but are you going to have that card, those cards in your hand? If you're playing a creature deck, you're probably not going to have that card advantage.
You're
not going to have card advantage and... You're not going to have all those creatures and a bunch of card advantage. You know what I mean? You're going to have to, like, kind of pick one if you're on that strategy.
You can also do that that draw spell, you can play an extra land this turn.
Urban Evolution.
Yeah. Urban Evolution. Mm-hmm. I just see something that, like...
Sphinx's Revelation.
Like, I don't...
Yeah, but that's... You're taking out 2 different decks now, that's what I mean. Is that, like... Well, I agree that it's more control-y than it is creature.
It definitely screams control, like a bank control deck. Just because the no maximum hand size alone, I think, says that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know when I play my control decks, I go and I rev for, like, 4 or 5, and then I have, like, 11 cards in my hand, so I have to discard.
I think that's why it's perfect for that. Yeah, I think that's amazing.
So I get to keep all of them. I don't have to get rid of it, and I don't have to, like, hopefully dig for an elixir to cycle all my cards back into my library.
So
that's going to be annoying as hell.
Do you think the control decks are going to abandon... So, blue-white... Do you think they're going to just abandon, like, black or red and go for green now because of this god? Do you think it provides that much utility to where they're like, fuck yeah, I'm just going to...
Dude, the maximum hand size is pretty big.
You have
5 in your hand and you're ready for 5 more, you get, like, all this flexibility and you're going to be able to... I mean, I think it's crazy.
Yeah,
I like that it provides a lot of flexibility. And the fact that you get to store mana,
you want mana, right?
Yeah,
you got all this. You got all these cards in hand.
Yes, I have tons of mana.
And then you got 15 fucking mana on the board, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Somehow, some way, you can start just tap one land and then just remove from your colorless pool and just keep going that way. And just I don't know. I think that the control stuff is going to be.
I think you're going to see some weird stuff, and the fact that you're going to see like Elvish Mystics, Sylvan Caryatids, and stuff like that. Maybe some Burning Tree Emissaries now, along with Supreme Verdict, which. Doesn't really make sense, because you don't really want to kill your own creatures.
Ramp up into killing your own creatures.
Exactly. But now that, like, you can effectively store the mana from them that they produce every turn until you do kill them, I think that would be really good.
Yep, I
think I like it. I definitely want to give the Bant control deck a shot to try the new god, because I think it will do really good in that kind of deck. But any other deck, I don't really see it fitting anywhere.
Yeah, I don't really see it too much in other stuff either. Now we're talking a lot about standard and all that stuff like that, and I have listened to like other podcasts seen online that they're talking about it's going to be a bomb in Commander, and I agree with that.
Well,
Kruvik's going to be a bomb in Commander.
Oh, yeah.
Anywhere that has like land destruction, it's going to be huge.
I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
But that's all I really have to say about that. I just think that we talk a lot about standard, but I think that this is a card that older players that play Legacy and Modern and Commander or whatever else, that they're going to look at this card and just see it for that. They're not even going to give a shit about standard. Yeah. They don't even want to think twice about that. They're just going to go right to their formats. But when they read a card like the Eroas, where it has like the can't be blocked by except for two more creatures. That's more like standard type stuff, you know. That, yeah. That's okay for standard. I wouldn't read that and be like, oh yeah, that's fucking legacy deck right there, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So what do you guys think about some other cards? We went through the gods and we all agree that they have gotten better, even though we're questioning some of them. What other cards are we thinking about? I wouldn't want to go through. I wouldn't even want to touch on the five, the ones that are in the intro packs. I wouldn't, those rares, those like, promos. Let's not even care about those ones. Honestly.
Okay, I don't know if they just spoiled more cards, or I checked this morning, but apparently I didn't, like, it didn't update.
You were just terrible. I didn't even read this card. Oh, I didn't check the website. Come on.
Fuck.
Spoilers, are usually Monday through Thursday, they're released, and they don't release any spoilers on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, because they come out at midnight. So, Sunday at midnight you get it, which is technically Monday morning. But right now is PAX East, which is going on, which is a huge... It's the Penny Arcade Expo. It's all about, like, video games and nerd culture and stuff like that.
But it will be... by the time this thing goes up, that will be long gone.
Exactly. So, as the recording right now, PAX East is going on, and they're having a Magic panel. And that's where a lot of these new cards that you're refreshing... And you're seeing, wait, I didn't see this card before. It's because they're spoiling some of these cards. And a lot of them are from Journey and Nyx, but some are from M15 as well. I don't think we'll touch on the M15 ones, because I think that could be its own little show when the time comes.
Well, I do.
I wouldn't even worry about
spoiler. At the end, I do just want to mention a little bit.
Okay, yeah, we can
save it later. You, come on.
I was brewing last night. I was doing some, like, in the future brewing type shit.
Yeah.
But I just, I just saw this card right this second. King Makar, the Golden Cursed, 2BB for 2/3. Of course, black gets screwed has any good abilities on it. It's a legendary creature, human. I love gold. It has inspired. Whenever this dude becomes untapped, you may exile target creature. If you do, put a colorless artifact token named gold on the battlefield. It has sacrificed this artifact, add one mana of any color to your mana pool.
Guild.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Guild is gone, by the way.
It's Guild on a creature.
Everyone get your copies of Guild and throw them in the fucking trash.
Guild on a fucking there's stick this, right here.
And there's also another, I'm going to read it off right now because it's not much to talk about. It's another black card that is, let's see here. Just a second. Where is it at?
There's one black card. Ritual of the Return?
No.
What is it?
Worst Fears?
No. Oh yeah, I wanted to talk about that too.
Yeah.
No, oh, Silence of Believers. It's an instant for 4, 2 and 2BB. Exile any number of target creatures and all auras attached to them. That is better than Guild already.
Oh, yeah.
It costs the same and it's instant speed.
Like, and you get a mana. The auras also.
You get what I'm saying. Do you want the one mana of any color or do you want all the auras? In our meta right now, you want the fucking auras.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is better, and then you can pay 7 and do 2 creatures with all their auras. So, anyways, I just think that Guild, even though we've talked about it before, those things are all going in the trash because they're all worth 1 penny, and who cares?
Yeah, we
have all the replacements.
When I read that, I was like, yep, Guild is definitely not, it's not going to be the sleeper that we thought it was.
Especially since this creature costs exactly the same as Guild.
That's what I mean. Yeah. All this stuff is like
except
the same.
It's 2BB. Mana instead of just the one, so it's not as splashable if you're talking about like limited. You know, you can't splash black just for this
really. It's true. I have Guild in my Chromantic Core deck, and I probably wouldn't be able to want to run this because it's double black.
Yeah, it's really hard to hit the double black reliably because you want to try to play your cards on time when you're thinking about deck construction, and so you have to have the proper amount of mana sources that produce the black mana to do it.
Right.
And this definitely is not a splashable card. If you're just going into black for something like this, maybe one other card. But if you're in black, it's one of your primary colors, then yeah, this is definitely where you want to be at.
So, back to what Springleaf Drum was saying.
Springleaf Drum?
Worst Fears. Oh my god. Oh,
So what I want to say first, before we go into it,
it's 8 mana and who cares? Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
It is a lot of mana, but it is a reprint of a card that was already...
It looks like a reprint. I was going to ask you about that.
It's called Mindslaver. So it's an artifact, it costs 6 mana, colorless, and pretty much it's the same thing where you get to take over... You know, once your turn's over, you take over your opponent's turn.
So if you read it, you control... It's sorcery for 8, it's a mythic... A mythic sorcery. Sounds fun.
Yeah.
You control target player during that player's next turn. My fucking phone just turned off.
And then exile.
Exile worst fears because you cannot do it again. Which I totally agree. Having it black and you can't do it again. So
like with the Mind Slaver, the old card, there's ways you can recur it. So there's ways you can lock somebody out of the game by doing it. If you had the amount of mana, I think it was like, I think it was 8 mana actually. Because it was 6 to cast, and then I think 2 mana to recur it. So pretty much you can lock an opponent out of the game once you hit that point, and then, you know, you have free reign over whatever they do. But something like this is definitely, I think, is the most playable card out of all of them, because you're actually playing out your opponent's worst fears. You take over their turn, and then, you know, you minus their planeswalker and don't, you know, do anything with it, or, you know, you tap all their mana and you don't use any of the mana, or you discard stuff, you know, if they want to play.
So I've been reading the newest, like, e-novel of Theros, and,
Nerd
bashing time. No, but I love the flavor text on it. Elspeth feared that her trespass into Nyx would not go unanswered. And it's just like, oh yeah, Elspeth? Oh yeah, well, boom, taking over your shit.
Your worst fears have come to fruition. Pretty
so like, okay, right, so obviously, 8 mana, sorcery. So, like, you're gonna have to find a way to, like, I almost say, like, ramp into it, you know, somehow. Like, figure out how to do that. Because I don't know if necessarily you would, like, want to wait till you draw it in turn 8.
What? There's a chance that you'll have that card in your hand and 8 mana and go, if I take over the next turn, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing it kind of sucks to have a bomb in your hand that might not work.
It could like technically...
You use it, everything goes to plan, doesn't get countered, it still just doesn't fucking work.
It could technically read, 8 mana, tap all lands your opponent control. That's pretty much like...
And all their creatures attack.
Yeah,
all their creatures attack, all their lands are tapped.
You probably wouldn't even want them to attack unless you could properly block.
That's what I mean, though.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, that's kind of even an iffy side to the card as well.
Yeah, it's like, definitely not, like, an instant win, you know? Yeah. But,
it isn't, though. That's the thing that kind of bothers me about it. It sounds amazing, but I'm like, oh, man, I might not even fucking do anything.
Yeah, but
great mana, you know?
But, yeah. I mean, you definitely have to do some sculpting to get this card to work. You can't just, like, drop it and be like, sweet, I win. I jacked one of your turns.
That's what I want.
You'd be like, oh, I'm going to play this, and then you're like, yeah, it's your turn, and you look at their hand, and it's like, it's just a bunch of land. And then you're just like, well, crap, you know, like, what do I do from here?
So, yeah, I mean, I got a little boner when I saw this card.
Little chub.
Yeah, just a little chub going on, but, I mean, obviously it's not an instant win card.
What else? Johnny, what do you think? Do you want to go to that?
Let's go to Johnny.
No, come on. Compromise.
No.
Babe, I'll do the dishes, you do the fucking trash, okay?
Okay, I'll make dinner, you can clean the dog food.
Johnny. Man stuff. Mentor of heroes. He's so tough. +1, distribute 3/1/1 counters among 1, 2, or 3 target creatures you control. Oh, second +1. Look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal an aura, creature, or planeswalker card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. -8. Dumb. That's all it says. It says, duh.
Yeah.
No. You gain 100 life if you -8. So it starts off as 4. It costs 5 to cast, which it probably won't cost 5 because you'll probably have some green rampy stuff in there. I think that this is pretty bonkers. The only thing is that it's heavily casted for 5, but I think that it's pretty fucking bonkers. What do you guys think?
I think... Okay, when I saw it, I was like, sweet, it's the first white-green planeswalker ever.
Mm-hmm.
And the -8 doesn't, like, win you the game, but most people, when they're playing planeswalkers, they don't care about the ultimate.
It could almost win you the game in our meta where life is so important.
Yeah, well, like, so me and Quickness were talking about it, and so... You gain 100 life, that buys you 3 to 5, 6 turns maybe, depending on the board state.
Mm-hmm.
So it buys you a lot of time.
It does.
But it doesn't win you the game. But it buys you time to just do, you can take damage, do whatever, and it doesn't matter what your opponent's doing, because you can...
And it helps right away. Like, it helps, like, off the, like, the, we were mentioning this, against, like, Kiora, the other Planeswalker, is that those Krakens are amazing. The 99 Krakens that come out for the Ultimate are amazing, but it doesn't affect the board right then and there. You can't, like, if you're gonna die next turn, that's not gonna help you.
Right.
Or if you know that they have flying, or there's something else that won't matter. So the Krakens, I think, are unbelievable, but this is something that will help you out, like you said, 3 to 6 turns or whatever, right away. It'll just happen. And the Kiora stuff, you know, you have to set it up right to make sure that those nines can get in and block properly and this and that. And so I thought that this was heavily casted, but pretty damn amazing.
All I gotta say about his ultimate, Skullcrack.
Yeah, no, it'll ruin your day.
Skullcrack, when I saw that, and like, you can't gain life.
You know what? When you're playing a deck like that, maybe you would eat, well, either way, you're gonna be gaining a bunch of stuff from the plus ability.
Why don't you
put that shit back in your sideboard and pull something else out. But, you know, if you had to. Screw it. Don't even give him the chance.
So when would you play the Skullcrack? Because you can't.
In response to the activation.
I thought you couldn't respond to the activation.
You do get priority. Because what happens is, what will happen is I play an Elspeth, I plus one it. As soon as I plus one, the trigger goes on, or the activated ability goes on the stack, I can downfall the Elspeth.
Oh yeah, you still
get the 3-1 ones, but now your Elspeth is gone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you still get what you activated. That never goes away. You're gonna get that regardless.
Except
in this case where, you know, you respond with Skullcrack.
Yeah.
And then you don't get any life and you lose your Planeswalker.
But who the fuck is playing Skullcrack besides, like,
I play Skullcrack. Anybody that runs red is gonna play Skullcrack.
Well, now.
Especially since, you know, Sphinx's Revelation decks are so prevalent in the meta right now.
Mm.
You wanna stop their, gaining life, which is a big part of the deck, from Sphinx's Rev. You know, you just wanna stop it.
Yeah.
You don't care if they draw cards because you have ways of burning them out.
I play 4 in my sideboard for Minotaurs.
Yeah.
Because there's just times when you need it, and it fucking destroys.
Yeah.
Destroys,
and you spend, like, 5 mana, you spend, like, 5 turns, and you're like, sweet, 100 life, I'm gonna win the game, they have no way of coming back, and you run it right into a Skullcrack. Like, would just be so demoralizing.
But
like,
that's pretty rare.
Obviously.
That is a rare case. You know, it's not gonna happen all the time.
Even if they're red, like, don't
play this Planeswalker.
As soon as you get to 8, fucking up it one more time. Just to be safe, you know?
That's fine, but I was saying that you don't even, maybe not even play it. If you don't feel like it. Next time, just.
And then even then, you know? Like, another argument against the whole Skullcrack thing is like, if you are running Skullcrack, a lot of times you are running burn. So theoretically, they'll never reach ultimate.
Right.
Because you can burn them out. But, you know, it's kind of like a good safety net. To have Skullcrack.
Hey, I want to mention what Skullcrack is, just in case we mentioned it. We said the word Skullcrack like 17 times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So players cannot gain, it's a 2-mana spell, 1 red, 1 white, colorless.
Yeah.
It is players cannot gain life this turn, damage cannot be prevented this turn, do 3 damage, or target player loses 3 life. I don't think it's 3 damage, I think it's 3 life. It doesn't matter though if it is or not. But that's it. So this person, you want to gain 100 life, but you put it on the stack, it prevents players from gaining life.
Yeah.
And does 3 to their face.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's bothersome.
I also want to say that a Johnny doesn't really protect himself super well.
He does not protect himself.
So if you don't have a board state and you throw a Johnny down,
it's worthless.
Yeah, he's just open season on a Johnny.
Just like other Johnny.
You can say like it's a 5-mana tutor effect almost. Like
I don't know what tutor is.
Tutoring means you can search your library for something.
Okay.
So that, you know, the second plus one ability allows you to look at the top 4 cards. That's why I say it's like a pseudo tutor, because it's almost like you're searching it. But you can, like, If you're so far behind, that's all you have, at least you can get something that can help try to turn the corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can play like a Pelucranos, or you can play like an Arbor Colossus, or something like that if you find, or you can play an Elspeth, you know what I mean, next turn, if you can find it. So that's like, on an empty board state, that is like, I don't know, best case scenario, really, it needs something else, and then the fact that it starts at 4 and it has 2 plus 1s, doesn't even save it from a Faded Conflagration, which I think red is, you know, this card is really weak to red.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know what I mean?
And also, it's plus ones. Like this... Okay, so I heard this from another podcast, so it's like, I didn't think of this on my own, but they brought up some really good points that this is almost good and bad for the card because the first plus one is more aggressive, yeah. You know, for more aggressive decks. You know, you get the 1-1 counters, and with this, it's like you could put all three 1-1 counters on one thing, or spread them out, or distribute them.
One counter on one creature, two counters on another creature.
Yeah, exactly. You have free range to put it, so it's an aggressive ability. The second plus one is more of a control like ability where
or mid range. You can go ahead and say
yeah,
mid range too.
Mid range,
I think that the second thing is like exactly what the green white strategy wants. Yeah. I think that's like all it has in the deck is an aura, creature, or planeswalker.
Yeah. Well, what they were trying to say was that the two plus ones are for two different decks.
Mm-hmm.
One deck wants to do the first plus one. And a different deck wants to play the second plus one. So it's, I mean, it gives it some versatility so it can be played in
agree.
Different, you don't agree?
I don't agree because, only the fact that.
It's not
that
useless.
The second plus yeah. one is advantageous in any strategy, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know the first one you might not be, it might not be your favorite. I can understand that, but like it might be, you know, you're not getting excited about that, but I think that any deck that has blue, or sorry, has green and white in it, is gonna be looking for a creature, aura, or planeswalker. I think it's like really
yeah.
important. So
yeah, like, I mean they're definitely not like useless to. So if
yeah.
if you're so basically one deck is really interested in the first plus one, but it can use the second plus one. It's not wasted on it.
Yeah.
And vice versa, the other style deck wants to use the second plus one, but it also could use the first plus one. Mm-hmm. But they're just geared towards different decks. So that grants it versatility to be played in different style decks. And then they also said that the minus eight, you know, it has a lot of casual appeal to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, newer players get excited about, I mean, anybody would be excited about.
I actually laughed out loud when I read that. I was like, what
yeah,
the fuck?
It's pretty
is
silly.
That, dude?
I saw a post on Reddit about it where they were like, okay guys, we got a Johnny almost done. What is his ultimate gonna be? And they're like, what time is this? 3 a.m. Oh, whatever. Just say he gains a bunch of life. 100, okay? Yeah, yeah. Whatever. Just 100. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it has a lot of casual appeal, and I mean, who wouldn't really be excited to get 100 life? If you could like guaranteed when you get to 8 to get 100 life, like
yeah.
you know, if Skullcrack was in the format or there's no way to prevent,
they weren't playing red or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like you, if you had the chance, you would ultimate it and be pretty
oh,
happy
yeah.
about it.
Definitely.
But I mean, it's not like, oh my god, I have to get to the ultimate, you know.
Yeah.
So I think like money, like a money wise it's gonna be, it's, you know, they call it the Jace effect or whatever, because what was it, the
is it like the Axe effect?
Yeah, it's kind of like the Axe effect. All these stray cats just start attacking.
That's the other one. That's the fucking Family Guy one.
Yeah.
Oh, I like you. You're sweet. What are you going to do? Okay,
so which Jace is like just crazy?
The most insane Jace ever is Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Yeah, so Jace the Mind Sculptor, that's the one. So Planeswalkers weren't really like, the pre-order wasn't like too crazy on him. And then all of a sudden, like Jace the Mind Sculptor like blew up. And so the price just like skyrocketed. And like, not a lot of people saw it coming. So like, a lot of people got their Jaces for pretty cheap, like right off the bat before, you know, people
yeah.
realized like,
caught
oh my
on.
God, this is crazy. So now it's called, you know, like the Jace effect, the Mind Sculptor effect, to where all Planeswalkers are gonna be overcosted right off the bat because
yeah.
you never know if it's just gonna, like, if it's gonna be the next
yeah.
Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Right.
The,
so
the stores that are,
because they're playing it safe, I see
yeah.
what you're saying.
So
the stores that are selling them, they're gonna wanna sell them for more than what you might think. Because, like, Knife was saying, the Jace effect. So they don't wanna, like, sell it for, like, $10, and then it shoots up to 80 because they missed out on it. So they're gonna sell it for, like, 30. You know, at least they can recoup some of that they're losing from the secondhand market. And, you know, it's a lot more
yeah.
instead of selling it for really cheap.
It's safer to overcost it. And then once the players get their hands on it, and once it enters the metagame and find out that it's not that great, then the price can drop.
Yeah.
You know, but they rather do that than have like, oh, you know, this Planeswalker's $10, and then it jumps into the metagame and it's this huge game changer, and so now it's a $60 card. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd rather play it safe and that have the price go down.
Totally.
So with this, like, I don't think it's gonna be like a $30 card, you know?
No, I don't think so either.
I think it'll be like 10.
It's gonna be the same as the other.
I think it'll be like 15 and then probably move down to like, yeah, like 8. It'll probably bounce between like 8 and 15.
But regardless of whether it really affects the metagame or not, I think there's enough appeal in the card to different formats and to newer players and casual players. You know, we don't even think about like the casual market, people who just want to play and don't give a shit. Like, oh, I like this card. Oh, 100 life. Like, I want that card. You know, I want to play with it at the kitchen table. Like, you know, we don't think about the people who like don't give a shit about like
competitive
play and the meta and listening to podcasts and like, you know, there's people like, oh, I see it, I like it, I want to play it, I'll buy it. You know?
Yeah.
So, I think this will be a good, once it hits the floor, it'll be a good pickup, just to pick up like a playset or something.
Just to hold on to.
Yeah, just to hold on to. If it like goes down to 5, like definitely just pick it up, cause who knows when, you know, it'll, and plus it's the only green white Planeswalker.
Yeah,
like that,
yeah,
that's
pretty sick.
That is something.
It's gonna have some appeal.
That is something.
Collectors are gonna want it, it's the first one.
Yeah.
One thing I wanna say is that, I don't think this one lends itself to an aggro strategy, because I think the Ajani Call of the Pride is where you want to be as an aggro strategy.
Right, right, right.
Especially with the -3, you get something double strike and flying, which is really a good finisher. And also, I think the new Ajani is more mid-range, but the one problem I see it in mid-range is you're gonna go Selesnya regardless, white-green, but you might want to go into Naya, which is red-green-white. And this cannot target Stormbreath Dragon, which is a huge, huge thing. Like, Stormbreath Dragon's like one of the main reasons why you run red, and that you can't affect it is kind of a drawback in my point of view.
Yeah, and you know, I made the argument for Aurora's God of Victory that, you know, for aggro strategy, it's a little too little, too late. You know, that might be the same thing with the new Ajani. You know, for really aggro strategies, it might be too little, too late. You know, who knows?
Yeah. I just think that the -3 on Call of Pride is just so much better.
Yeah.
For sure.
For that type of strategy. I just think in general, the -3 on Ajani is better than all the modes on the new Ajani. Just because it gives that deck what it really needs, like I was talking about with
that punch.
Yeah, the god you just brought, Virus. It gives it that reach, you know. They clogged up the ground game, you don't have a lot of flyers to begin with, and you need some way to just punch through that last, like, 5 points of damage. And this, you know, the Johnny Call of the Pride -3 gives that to you, whereas the new Ajani doesn't really help you in any of those aspects, which is why I think it goes mid-range, because your card quality at that converted mana cost level, it's just so much better than a lot of other things that you don't really need that reach because you inherently already have it.
Guys, I just healed my Pokemon.
You did.
And I hope you come back soon to see us. I always thought that was fucked up when you healed your Pokemon in, like, the hospital. And it's like, I hope to see... I just healed him again.
Again, yeah.
Because I forgot if I healed him all.
Dude, I just opened a portal.
So, no, but I thought it was fucked up in Pokemon where, like, oh, we hope to see you soon. Oh, so you hope my Pokemon die and get sick? Like,
yeah,
why
exactly.
The fuck would you hope to see me soon?
Well, why do you want to see him faint?
Yeah, exactly. That's,
they don't die, by the way.
Well, yeah, yeah.
It's a, you know, PG game.
Yeah.
So they faint.
Yeah, they faint. They, yes. Oh, heavens to Murgatroyd, and they faint. But, okay, so... So Godsend. Let's fucking talk.
Dude, I was
going
to have a stupid little fucking pun to introduce the Godsend. You just ruined it.
Well, we do it.
I don't have it anymore.
Is it the one? Is it God's send or is it God's end?
Oh.
Whoa.
Godsend or God's end?
So in the lore of the book, of the e-novel, basically, like, I don't want to ruin too much. It's in the beginning of the book, so it doesn't fucking matter. But Purphoros and Heliod are, like, fighting. And Purphoros drops his sword. And
Purphoros had a sword?
Yeah.
He had a hammer.
Yeah, but he, like, forged this new badass sword. And he was
Once he dropped
it.
His sword, he's like, oh, I need a new badass weapon, so I'm going to make a hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he, like, spent his time building this sword, and he dropped it, and it fell into, like, the human realm. And so, dude, stop.
Dude, do something about this, dude. This
dude, Pokemon... I suck at Pokemon. What do you expect?
Dude, do you even leave the hospital?
No.
He just faint and he just get outside. Oh, I'm too weak.
Yeah,
my trainer was not good
son.
Enough.
So his sword fell into the human realm, and Elspeth picked it up. And so that's like the flavor of the card, is you see Elspeth with the sword. And so it's a legendary artifact equipment, 1WW. Equipped creature gets +3/+3. That's pretty badass.
Yeah.
Whenever equipped creature blocks or becomes blocked by one or more creatures, you may exile one of those creatures. Wow.
Yeah.
Already, that's pretty badass. What... There's more text. Dear God.
More?
More.
It better be a negative.
Yeah. You get 100 life.
Makes you a sandwich?
Yeah. Opponents cannot cast cards with the same name as cards exiled with Godsend, and it's a equip 3 cost. So 3 to bring out, 3 to equip, but that's a lot of good shit.
So first thing is that it's 2 white devotion on the board.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Whether it's equipped or not.
Yep.
That's sweet. It's permanent. You're good to go.
And it's an artifact, not an enchantment artifact, so it makes it that much harder to remove.
That much harder to remove.
Right. Yeah, it's just artifact equipment.
Yeah,
perfect. So that's a good start.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. That's a crazy fucking card.
Do you guys think that it's basically saying it's, like, unblockable, in a sense? Like, as long as this creature is here, like, it's pretty much unblockable. Unless you really...
If you really need to kill, like, whatever the creature is attacking, then, you know, throw something with Death Touch in front of it or something.
Yeah.
But it still makes it, like...
It's gonna fuck up your plan.
Yeah, because, say, like, if you blocked it with, like, a Sylvan Caryatid or something like that, you can't cast another one, and you kinda want to cast another one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's things about that. Even, like, an Arbor, or not the Arbor, I mean the Elfish Mystic.
Yeah.
Like, you probably want to get that extra green mana on the board for your... That's probably what your deck is about, mm-hmm. you know? So if you try to chump block with something like that, then you're going to fuck yourself up again. It's just going to make it that much better. It's not just killing that one guy.
I think this is going to be a... Because they, you know, looking back and, like, doing some research, older Magic had more badass equipment.
Oh, yeah.
So, and they haven't really done too much with, like, badass equipment, at least since we've been playing, which Gatecrash.
Right.
And so
I think Innistrad had a little bit. Right?
Maybe.
And before that, what is that one?
A few ones.
What about that one, is it like Moradin or something like that? What the hell is the one before that?
Moradin Besieged or something.
Is that what it is? I don't know. Whatever block there was before, the Innistrad block. I saw
Mirrodin?
Some crazy shit in
that. Scars of Mirrodin, where it had the sword cycle. Like Sword of Ice and Fire, Sword of Feast and Fire.
Had that, and then I thought they had like some other like +4/+4/1 or some other crazy stuff. I don't know. Either way, when I was reading the old ones, I'm like, god damn, these are nuts.
Yeah, so we haven't really seen in our Magic lifespan since Gatecrash, we haven't seen like a badass equipment like this.
The best one was Fire Shrieker, and that wasn't even good.
Yeah,
you know,
that was
give,
like
give some double strike.
That was
whatever.
All right, unlimited or whatever.
Yeah.
But so I think this is kind of something we haven't seen in a while. You know,
yeah.
So this is gonna be really, I think, sought after.
Yeah.
And so okay, here's my little theory. And most of the stuff I say is like stuff I've heard and it makes sense, or, you know, stuff I've put together from what I've heard. So, you know, most people don't know what the fuck they're talking about when they come into a new thing. You know, they just kind of learn from what other people say, which is natural. So anyways, so the third set in a block usually has the least amount of cards in circulation. Because, sure, people like stores crack open boxes, and players crack open boxes or packs, but the third set in a block is not drafted as much as any other set.
Right.
So, like, Theros. We drafted triple Theros. We were opening 3 packs of Theros for, like, months. And then Born of the Gods came out. We were still opening 2 packs of Theros and 1 pack of Born of the Gods. And now we're going to be opening 1 of each. And then once M15 comes out, we're going to stop opening packs of all 3 and just do M15. You know?
Knife, your math is solid.
Yes. I did graduate junior high, so I know what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
I made it out of elementary school.
I've been reading at a third grade level for a long time.
Yeah, not to brag, but I know math. I do is the math. So, basically, a lot of these cards aren't going to be as much in circulation as, let's say, Theros cards. So we're going to see a lot more Stormbreath Dragons than we are Godsends. You know, they're both mythics, but just because of drafts and the packs being opened, we're not going to see as much Godsend. So, and just all the other cards as well. So I wanted to get a box of Born of the Gods, but Born of the Gods just looked like fucking not. I mean, there's some good cards in there, but
it was
just
a weak set overall.
As far as the value proposition, it's the weakest.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I think with these multicolored gods, which most of them look pretty fucking good, and a Johnny and Godsend and a couple handful of these other rares, I think this is going to be the set that I'm going to get a box because I think it's going to pay off.
Yeah, definitely. It's box worthy.
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
I had to say it. I didn't want to say it. Too played out.
So
but I had to. I'm weak.
So what, you know, let's talk about a couple other cards here.
Well,
what
I want to say about Godsend is, I think it's going to work well with Elspeth, and I'm going to put it in my American, like, 1 or 2 copies of my American control deck. Because I'm just going to equip it to tokens, and I'm just going to swing in every time.
And it doesn't matter if they die.
It doesn't matter if they die, because I'm going to get more tokens anyways, and I can re-equip it. It's only 3, you know.
You're going to have 3 by that time.
Yeah,
you're going to have 17 by that time.
Yeah, if I'm at Elspeth, you know, level of mana, you know, I'm going to be able to equip it every single time and leave counter magic up as well, or, like, burn spells. So I think it's going to really be good. It's going to help provide the extra damage, which I think is really going to be needed. And, you know, if they happen to have block with something, you know, they block with something that's really good, you know, you can't cast it again. So I don't have to worry about countering anything to that effect on that creature, you know, if you're going to try to cast it again, because you can't, pretty much. So I think it's going to be really good in there. It's going to be, I don't know, really good with evasive creatures as well.
Oh, yeah.
So just because it's +3/+3 is really good for 3 mana. So, I think it's definitely going to see play in, like, those types of decks. Otherwise, like, it's a good card, but I don't think it really has, a home outside of a control deck, maybe one other deck. So it's going to be, like, it's only going to see, like, play in 1 or 2 decks, maybe at most, but it's still a really powerful card.
Very
on its own.
Powerful card.
I think in the current meta, it won't see a shitload of play, but who knows when rotation comes,
yeah.
You know, since shit's gonna need to be replaced and the meta is just gonna get flipped on its fucking ass. I think it'll definitely find a home then.
Yeah.
Or more homes.
Knife, what card are you looking at right now? I'm looking at a couple cards.
I was actually looking at Cura's Dismissal. That's gonna be like a really good, like, limited card.
Yes.
So, Cura's Dismissal is 1 blue. It's an instant, and it's uncommon. But it has Strive, which is a new mechanic. Cura's Dismissal costs 1 blue more to cast for each target beyond the first.
So that's first. That's what pretty much Strive is, pretty much. So, Strive allows you to target more things.
Yeah, the more you pay, the more you can target.
Yeah, so you pay more, so you can target more things. So, that's pretty much what the Strive mechanic is trying to accomplish. That it provides cheap effects for just 1 creature, and if you want to pay more, it can affect multiple creatures.
So the actual spell is return any number of target enchantments to its to their owner's hands. So I see that card, it reads blowout to me. It reads oh, you have a fucking, you have a Irois on the board, and you also have some other, you
bestow
know,
creature.
Yeah, you have a bestow creature on your creature you're attacking with, so you think that you're gonna be able to attack in. I can't even block, and even if I could block with two or more creatures, I can't even do damage, so I bounce your bestowed creature.
Right.
And then I bounce the god, so you're like, lowly 2/2 or whatever you were planning on attacking with gets fucking blown
out. Like, it's like a more flexible but not as good Cyclonic Rift.
Yes.
Cyclonic Rift is all permanence, doesn't matter if they're enchantments or not, but it also costs 7 to do that.
Yeah.
Unless you do it to overload it, which is what you want to do with Cyclonic Rift. That's the ideal thing. This is only enchantments. I know there's a lot of enchantments, and I know it's flexible, so you can do 1, do 2, do 3, do whatever, but I don't think that the Cyclonic Rift is like win the game shit for 7.
And most in a lot of cases,
this is not, but it's still like, it's gonna fucking.
Yeah, that's what I said for like, for limited, I think it's gonna be crazy because there's, everyone's gunning for bestow creatures because you can cast them as creatures or you can cast them with bestow. So it leaves it leaves your curve flexible to do what you need at the time. Mm-hmm. So I just think Cure's Dismissal is just it's another fucking tool that Blue has to just fucking gain tempo. Like Blue has so much fucking tempo control in the limited format currently that it's just it's fucking nuts.
Yeah, you pair it with like Voyage's End or Griptide, you know, or you can go Cyclonic Rift, and it's just like you have so much tempo advantage that like it doesn't really matter that they redeploy their threats is because you're pretty much locking them out of the game with so much tempo that, you know, your creatures don't have to be that big because you swing in every single turn because they have no way to block.
So another card that I wanted to mention. Okay. One of our listeners, Neil, he brought this up on our Facebook, and you know, reading it over and over again, it's just getting more and more powerful in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Citizen Tactics, if you want to call it.
Oh, okay. Yes.
It's one in green, instant, strive. Has strive effect for the first thing. So it'll cost
What's the strive cost?
The strive cost is 1 green.
So if you want to target 2 creatures, it costs 3 you're going to have to 3.
2 green, two green and one.
And if you want to do like more than that, you know, you just pay green extra on
and
top.
I think that this is a card that, before I even read it, I know I feel like it's going to be good no matter what time you cast it.
Yeah.
Like late game with Flukernos, any time I think is going to be great. Thank you very much, sir. So what it reads is, until end of turn, any number of target creatures get +1/+1 and gain, like, tap this creature. This creature fights another target creature. So the fight ability has always been really relevant for green, but a lot of times it's like a common and it costs like 4.
That, whereas the Planeswalker with Domri.
Right.
You know, has the fight ability.
Right,
built
right.
Into
but it's
it.
Only, you only do it once and it sets him back and turn. It's a pain in the ass to, it's a really powerful effect, but it's a pain in the ass. So this card, I think, is amazing for what green wants to do. You're going to have big creatures out there, of course, like Plukernos and whatever else. And then you're going to be able to have this as a removal spell at instant speed, and you get to have it, it's a removal spell that is multiple.
Yeah.
And then you have other things like Cure's Follower and stuff like that, that can untap that creature, and this effect lasts till end of turn, so you can keep doing it as long as you can untap that creature.
Yeah.
You can get your Plukernos, and you can just take out all their small stuff, or whatever, using this, and then you can monstrify him and attack next. I don't know, there's just so many things you can do with this card.
You can
card.
Like monstrify Plukernos and then play Synthesian Tactics and then, you know, fight something on top of it with it as well.
If you're in a pickle, throw this guy out. But if you can play it right, you can just disrupt their whatever they have in their battlefield big time.
Yeah.
If you can wait later in the game, build up what you have, and throw this guy out there, and they're going to be like, oh fuck, I just killed, like, you know, 3 of the things that I was planning on using or whatever else. Even to just to get rid of, like, things like the Sylvan Caryatid or whatever. It's hex. Oh, no, that one's... No, yeah, no, you can't use that one. I'm sorry. But other mana ramp kind of guys. If you want to just take them out, the simple stuff, because green doesn't have removal, this is a great way to do it.
Did you guys already talk about the heroic aspect of it?
No.
No.
So it's...
It's a heroic trigger for
a cheap
thing.
Cheap heroic trigger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For 3 or 4.
Now green, people, I know it's gonna get bigger. Green doesn't have like a lot of heroic stuff right now that people are that excited about, but I know that new aggro deck, the mono green aggro deck, has some heroic stuff, I think. Doesn't it?
No.
No?
The mono green that recently placed like top 8 and like a Star City Games or something like that.
You didn't have Heroic?
No, I didn't have Heroic. It played off of Ocean.
Well, then for now, it's not going to be fantastic for that, but I do agree that it is a trigger for each thing. Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty sweet. Anything that targets something is going to be great. And maybe it can be played along with the green-white stuff, because the white has all the good heroic stuff.
Yeah.
You can use this along with that, play the Planeswalker, whatever else.
Definitely, I think green-white is getting a lot of good stuff. A lot of good tools, especially just green on its own. Just because I think white is already a deep and solid enough color that it doesn't really need too much help, whereas I think green really needed the help. And this is a good tool for it to... show its brute strength, pretty much what green is. So.
So another one, Eidolon of Blossoms, 2 and 2 green, it's 4 total. Enchantment creature spirit has Constellation. Now Constellation's a new mechanic also, just like Shrive. And I'll read this one and we'll explain what it is. Whenever Eidolon of Blossoms or another enchantment enters the battlefield under your control, draw a card. So when you bring this thing out, anything with Constellation, you bring it out, the effect triggers right away. Anytime you bring out an enchantment after it, it'll trigger the same effect. So this thing draws a card right when it brings it out. So that means that, like, it's in a sense like you're casting it and just bringing something up back in your hand. So, like, that's perfect.
And it's called a cantrip. It replaces itself pretty much.
There you go. And then if you're going to play a deck like this, you're going to be playing a lot of enchantments. It's always going to be replacing itself as long, it's a 2/2, so it's not going to stay alive for that long, probably.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just for the sake of casting it itself, you're going to draw a card right away. Mm-hmm. And you could use it one more time, you got advantage of that card.
And that's really what green needs, is card advantage.
They do need that. Especially
it's mid-range, it's more of aggro, you're trying to deploy as many threats on the board as possible, and you can get to a point where you're top decking and you're still not winning. This will kind of help bring you back into like a stalemate, or help you turn the corner and start winning because you're able to draw more of your threats and deploy them.
Right. So what else? What else we got?
I don't know. How do you guys have hours to talk?
Yeah.
Because I want to talk about the Sage of Hours. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so this guy is 1 and a blue. He's a 1/1 human wizard. Heroic.
I don't give a shit about this guy. Whenever you right now, I just do not care.
Whenever you cast a spell that targets Sage of Hours, put a 1/1 counter on it. Remove all 1/1 counters from Sage of Hours. For each 5 counters removed this way, take an extra turn after this one.
That reads amazing, right? I don't give a shit.
Master Biomancer. 5.
Yeah, dude, that's not winning you the game still. Extra turns do not win you the game necessarily.
Dude, as soon as I saw this, Evolve Simic deck. Does this not fit into it? Bioshift? It's move 1/1 counters from one creature to another creature?
Master Biomancer.
So, the Bioshift, I think that's what it's called.
Yeah.
So you move 1/1 counters from one target creature to another target creature. Not only are you targeting this, so it affects
Heroic.
It triggers Heroic, but you're moving the counters.
Yeah.
So I just, when I saw it, I thought of your old fucking counter deck to where you just start putting out evolved creatures and they start evolving. And then you put out fucking Master Biomancer, you put out this guy, move the counters, blah, 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 and then boom.
Extra turn.
Yeah, extra turn. Like, it's just, like, obviously, Christmas Land, best case scenario, way far down the rabbit's hole, but, like, are you not even, you're not that interested?
I'm not interested.
You're not interested at all.
I'm not interested at all.
I'm gonna build a fucking countered, An extra turn deck.
Yes.
And just fucking rape your mouth with it.
Extra turn, but like, I don't know what to say. It's like, you get to draw a card, you get to maybe attack again, cast some extra stuff, untap your mana. There's already stuff that like does that to me, so yeah. I'm not worried about that. I feel like your extra turn is not going to win you the game, and so your whole everything you needed to make it trigger once didn't win the game, and everything had to fall perfectly for even that to happen. So, I don't know. I could be way wrong and this could blow up, but for me, I do not care about this
card. I mean, this looks like one of those cards where it's like super crazy, but it's just really easy to deal with, so like it doesn't... It does nothing because it's so easy to deal with. But I just...
5 counters. I know that you
then
get...
Then again, like, if you think about it...
God damn, it's hard, dude.
With 5 counters and it's a 1/1 creature to begin with, that's a 6-power creature. right there. So right. on its own, it can threaten the board, and then you can threaten to take extra turns on top of it. But it does seem like a build around me card where you have to really focus on yeah. just this card, and it kind of wants to be like a combo-y deck. And
oh, definitely.
With combo decks is that you have to win the game when you combo off. If you don't win the game when you combo off, it's not really a combo, and you're just playing like a synergistic deck.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Yeah. So when you're thinking of combo, combo is like, okay, I got my combo pieces together, I can win this turn. And if you don't win this turn, your combo is not really doing anything. It's just you're playing cards that kind of work together.
I am going to go all fucking Christmas Land, a quickness style, best case scenario, rule the world with this fucking card.
That's right.
I just want to try to build like this, like maybe throw like Metamai in there so you get turn after turn after
Metamai and Aurelia so you get extra combat steps within that extra turn.
Yeah, like it's, well, that'd be like four colors, right?
Well, you have blue, yeah, it'd be four color, blue, green, white, red.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
so maybe not Aurelia, but you could, yeah.
But you're splashing white. For Metamai already.
Yeah.
Right? So maybe you could, you know, if you're only playing one red card, you could theoretically splash it off temples and stuff.
Yeah. See, Aurelia, I think, is better than this. Really? You know, I mean, I know it's a different deck completely.
Yeah.
But, like, it's a haste.
Pretty much Aurelia is a flyer.
It's
going to
work. Like, yeah. It's going to get in or whatever. If you can cast
whenever
anything,
she attacks,
work.
You get an extra combat step and exactly. she can't attack, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
She can't attack
actually,
the second combat.
Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
One of those cards reads where they still can attack. I don't know which one it is. There's another one of those cards that they still can't
Metamai,
attack.
Metamai cannot attack on its extra turn.
Okay, but the other one that
Aurelia
can,
but she just doesn't grant.
I think it's a 3/4, so you're only doing 3 damage. Yeah. But yeah, it can only trigger one time, that's all.
So, yeah, there's just some fun brews to be had with this card.
I don't want to be negative about it. I just, when I read it, I was like, man. And I go, no, that's not working. That's not going to happen.
Why
am I doing this?
Still dies the Doomblade.
Still dies the Doomblade, dude. So what else?
One card I'm really excited about is Hypnotic Siren. So it costs one blue mana for a 1/1 with flying. And it has a bestow of 5 and double blue.
This thing's pretty sick, actually.
Yeah. Five and double blue. Yeah, and enchanted and creature gains flying. You control enchanted creature, so you can enchant your opponent's creature, you take it, and then it gains +1/+1 in flying. So I think it's just like, it's like, cards like a body double or, mind control, I think was the older cards.
So you.
Where they take your, or like domestication.
Yeah.
Where
like
you take your opponent's creatures.
Bomb, dude.
Yeah.
Like limited this is just huge bomb. Because you can take the creature, okay, well now they have a huge creature to deal with, they're gonna kill their own creature and you're left with a 1/1 flyer at the end of it. Like, what more do you want, really? Like, I think this is just, like, the card to have. It is so good.
For limited.
I think
you can see a little bit of standard play, but I mean, I think limited is just really
serious
thing.
You know, 7 mana is kind of hard to get to. When you think of 7 mana in blue, you think of control decks, which I don't think really a control deck is
going to want to play. No, but you can do a white-blue creature strategy, Azorius.
You can do like a white creature, blue mid-range type
mid-range
deal,
type thing
almost. Which, I mean, I don't
Hero
think
of
really...
Hero of Iroas and some other stuff.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, theoretically you can make it a 5 mana bestow with the Iroas.
6 mana bestow.
Because it doesn't reduce it by 2? So it'd be 3 colorless.
No, reduce it
by 1. Okay, so 6 mana. Yeah, so which... You know, it's a lot easier to get to. That's like Elspeth right there.
And then you can throw in the creature. I guess it wouldn't count as a creature. Never mind. If you were to bestow it, because I was thinking of the dude from M14 that flying creatures cost one less to cast or whatever.
Oh yeah, that guy's something of
Evil Lord Niles.
But this would be a enchantment, so it wouldn't.
Or Warden of Evil Eyes.
Wouldn't.
Yeah.
Count.
Right. Right.
I think there's like a lot of fucking like. Cards that are I'm excited for them to enter the meta.
Dude,
to, like,
this is like the these cards when you read them, they're all like they're kind of nuts. Like, I'm not saying that they're going to be like they're not ultimately powerful super one sided. A lot of the stuff like helps out both, or they have drawbacks or this and that. But like, when you read the shit, it's bonkers. Like, why are they going so crazy? Like an example of. All the cards that are the dictate cards, Where they do both? Like I'm reading
the flash enchantments.
The flash enchantments, whatever.
Yeah.
They affect both, but like that's nuts. Like all those effects are nuts, right?
Yeah.
You know, we haven't seen that in this current meta in a while. To see if I do this, then you get to do this. Yeah. I don't know.
There's only a couple cards in standard legal that do something like that. There's one where it's a creature for like 7 mana where it doubles all mana that you tap for.
When we play Commander, we see cards like this, but when we play Standard, we don't see cards like this.
Yeah. Okay, so Doomwake Giant. So it's like, isn't that one of the promos probably be like put in the
It is. That's what I'm saying.
Deck.
Don't talk about the promos. Who cares about the promos?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you care about this card?
But I kind of like it. No, you know? No,
it has
a 4 and a black. It's a 4/6, which is in black. That's just a 4/6 body for 5. Yeah. Like, that's pretty
Usually
good.
Usually you don't
that's
get a lot good. Of power in black, but you get a lot of toughness.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, that's pretty good. Has Constellation. Whenever Doomwake Giant or another enchantment enters the battlefield under your control, creatures your opponents control get -1/-1 to end the turn. So, there was a card called Infest.
Yes, that gives all creatures -2/-2, which is pretty much Drown in Sorrow is.
Yeah, right so, now. I mean, this is kind of build your own Drown in Sorrow type of thing. Except, isn't Drown in Sorrow all creatures, not your opponents?
Infest is all creatures too.
Okay, so this is just your opponent's creatures. So, it's kind of build your own Drown in Sorrow for their creatures, kind of, sort of. Anyway, I got like a little bit excited when I saw it. If there's a way to get a lot of enchantment creatures out on the board at the same time, or just if there's any really good black enchantments. Yeah. I don't think there's too many of those, but
it's going to make combat very difficult with this guy on the board.
Yeah.
Because you never know when, you know, you can actually block or not. So it's going to make your decision making on your turn a lot harder.
Yeah.
To deal with, because you don't know if they're going to have an enchantment coming out or not. So you don't know if playing one guy is better than the other.
And so you can flash in your, cuz they haven't spoiled the black
Dictate one.
So, I mean, you know, depending on what that is, you could flash that in at the
to
last
get a
second.
Quick -1/-1 to everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if it's affecting both sides, then, you know, you're going to be hopefully the winner.
Yeah.
Because you're getting the
That's
additional
the goal
minus
with
one,
it.
Minus
the
one.
The flash. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think a lot of these cards are.
All right, let me read this. I didn't see this until now, so I'm guessing it's brand new. Maybe not. You guys can correct me. Polymorphous Rush.
I was just looking
at that
one. That
just came today.
That just came today, okay. So it's an instant for 2 and a blue, so it's 3 total. Strive, it costs 2 more, basically, to target more things. So it says, choose a creature on the battlefield. Any number of target creatures you control each become a copy of that creature until end of turn. So you can copy one creature for 3, copy 2 creatures, or copy that creature for 2 of your creatures or whatever for 5. So,
well,
like, if there's a Desecration Demon on the battlefield and he attacked last turn, you can pay 5 with this card and
you have
two Desecration Demons and attack in.
Yeah.
As long as you've got creatures, so this card is not just like a Domestication, it's not just like the Act of Treason, because you have to have your own creatures on the board
to
make this useful. But it also is pretty damn cheap to do for 5. You pay 5 and you can do 2 creatures. Yeah.
So
of the most powerful creature on the board.
You take your like lowly 2/2s you have, you buff them into their opponent's biggest creature, and then you make them trade. You know, you make them trade. So you're effectively taking their biggest threat off the board.
Yeah.
And you're trading it for one of your lowly creatures plus that card.
This is a great removal spell too, that you can pay 3 and remove 1, and then pay any time you can afford more. If you can pay 5, then you can remove 2 of their creatures. You're trading, but it's still removal.
If they want to trade them, they can, but it's going to put a lot of pressure on them to want to trade, because they're not, most likely, going to want to take that.
Or if they're tapped.
But it's instant speed, though. If they attack, and they don't know you have this, that's all I'm saying, is you turn the creatures into it, and they attack into the same shit.
Or if their creatures are tapped, you could, if it's late game, and it's kind of like
swing in for lethal.
That's why that's a Creation Demon thing. That's what I meant.
Yeah, exactly. Swing in for the win. So, I mean, it has applications, but I think
limited, especially.
Yeah,
I think it's
limited.
Just because it's in blue, I think it's more of a reactive defensive card. So what's going to happen is they're going to swing in, you're going to cast the card, and then you're going to copy their biggest threats, and then you're going to trade off a bunch of them. You know what I mean? Just get them off the board. And it's nice that it does have the flexibility to go in for lethal if they attack and they don't know you have the card, which is an additional upside to it. But I think it's more of like a defensive card because it is in blue, and blue is more of like a defensive reactive type team.
Dude.
So what else? What else we got?
Launch the Fleet.
Yes.
Holy shit. Can you talk about like one of the best heroic enablers?
Oh, yes.
Holy shit. Launch the Fleet. It cost a white. Just a single white.
Sorcery speed, though.
Sorcery.
That's okay. I'm just saying.
Yeah. So it has Strive, which is, you know, pay more. More targets.
Target more.
So Launch the Fleet costs one colorless, just one colorless more, for each target beyond the first. Until end of turn, any number of target creatures gain, whenever this creature attacks, put a 1/1 white soldier creature token on the battlefield tapped and attacking.
So that last part is like huge. It's huge because you can get in and like, it's hard to block because now you have a bunch of like 1/1 tokens you have to block too. So like if you need like a little bit of a damage and like you can't attack in profitably, you can cast this attack in, get the 3 extra damage in because now you have more attackers than they have blockers. Like a lot more pretty much if, you know, you set your board state upright. And it's kind of like the little extra reach that the white needed on top of splashing another color because you can just go straight white. Like mono white or white weenies and put this card in that deck. And then it makes it a lot harder because they come in, attacking already.
There is a little setback for it because you have to have those creatures, you have to be ready to attack with everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's kind of hard to do. If you're playing a white strategy, you probably don't have big creatures. So you got to figure out a way to attack with 3 or 4 creatures where they're not going to just die because then it's not worth it. And then, because you can't just cast this thing for like 8 because you're only going to be attacking with this many creatures.
Yeah.
So you can only cast it for what you attack with, which will probably be like 3 or 4 creatures. And that's still good. I mean, this is a great card, but I'm saying it's still one of those things that you can have this card in your hand and not be able to use it profitably.
Yeah. I think it's
fantastic.
I think it's perfect great. For the heroic deck that I hate. I hate
the
drafted,
white red,
the
white blue.
Red, white blue heroic deck.
Yeah.
In limited, I fucking hate drafting it. I hate playing it. I hate playing against it. But this is so good for it. Fucking turn 2, a Crow and Skyguard. Turn 3, Wingsteed Rider. Turn 4, fucking this and something else, you know? Mm-hmm. So 2 triggers, fucking 2 guys on the board, or like turn 1, what's the,
The fabled hop, I'm thinking the favored hoplite thing because it gives
turn
you
turn 1 favored hoplite, turn 2 Skyguard, turn 3 Wingsteed Rider, turn 4 fucking trigger all 3 and get 3 1/1s attacking.
Yeah, no, it is in those situations. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean that's mm-hmm. like best case scenario. Mm-hmm. So for those who don't know, the favored hoplite is a 1/2 for 1 white. It has heroic, put a 1/1 counter on it whenever it's targeted. Whenever you cast a spell, it targets it, and it prevents all combat damage till end of turn.
All damage, I believe.
All damage.
All damage till end of turn.
So that's a 1-drop. So the Crone Skyguard is a 2-drop. It's a 1/1 flyer. Whenever you cast a spell, it targets it. Put a 1/1 counter on it. And then the Wingsteed Rider it's 1 and 2 white for mm-hmm. a 2/2 flyer. And basically the same thing. Whenever you target it, it gets +1/+1. Yeah. So you would be essentially.
What about that Pegasus that gives all the humans flying?
That one doesn't have a heroic.
I know, but still, yeah, it'd be a good way to ensure that you can attack in.
Oh yeah.
Proper, because you a lot of things are on the ground.
Evasion. Yeah.
And then yeah, exactly. That's all I'm saying is that's the problem with the card is that if you can't attack with everything, then like you can't use it.
Yeah, exactly. So that would be 2/4. 2/4.
6/8, who do we appreciate? I have no idea what you're talking
7
about.
7 plus 3 1/1s, so you're attacking for 10 on turn 4. Not too bad.
Just to bring up what Hot Sauce was saying, these are white soldier creatures. Mm-hmm. They're not humans. So the Pegasus will not bring these guys flying.
Gotcha.
They will stay on the ground.
Gotcha.
But still you'd be attacking
But at least that's okay because at least you get... My main point of it was that your creatures that you had on the board attacking.
Yeah. The other creatures, the non-token creatures.
And honestly, I don't play Pegasus in any of my decks. So it's just up for conversation, that's all.
But I mean, this is the application I see most is for limited to where On turn four, you'd be attacking for two with the Hoplite, which he's going to survive. Two with the Crone Skyguard, which has flying, so evasion. Mm-hmm. Three with the Wingsteed Rider, flying, has evasion. And then three 1/1s. So that's, I mean, it's 10. So it's overwhelming in the limited format to where if you're playing like a mid-range deck, like you're just like, shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Already?
You have like maybe some like mana dorks out and maybe like one big guy.
Yeah, or like a role player or fucking something.
Yeah.
Role player is something that, you know, you used for his activated or triggered ability.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the best attacker blocker. But I mean, yeah, that, ugh. I did not look forward to playing against this card.
Oh, yeah. One card I wanted to bring up that I'm really excited about is Interpret the Signs. It's 5 and a blue for a sorcery. You get to scry 3 and then reveal the top card of your library. Draw cards equal to that card's converted mana cost. So
limited bomb, of course.
Yes.
Card advantage, and like that's going to be great.
Yeah.
You have a smaller deck. You know what to expect. 40 cards, whatever.
Just
that's
Scry
3
on
fantastic.
Its own is huge. You know, you see it on Prosonosca Sphinx. He's the only one that can Scry 3, pretty much. But just being able to draw cards, and, you know, that's one thing when Return to Ravnica rotates out, is that we haven't really seen a lot of good card draw cards, pretty much, that are really good. And I think this is going to be one of the really good ones. It might take over the place of Sphinx's Rev in control decks. We don't know yet, because we don't know if we're going to get something else like that, or we don't know if control is going to go over from a like a life gain stall strategy over to like a tempo, kind of like burn you out strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this fits well if it doesn't see
a
card like Sphinx's
Rev. It could be a decent replacement, because Scry 3, okay, so you put Elspeth on top.
Mm-hmm.
And then you fucking
draw six
cards.
It's like a, like, I like opportunity.
Yeah.
But this is better.
Mm-hmm. Cause you get to,
most cases.
You get to set up your draws. You
dependent
get to set up
on
your
draws.
But it's cause the scry. That's why I say, cause draw 4 cards is sweet.
Yeah.
But I like the scry better than that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I'd rather scry 3 and draw 3 or something like that than just draw 4.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
So I think we're gonna see something better to replace it, but for right now, I think that's a very decent replacement for the control style Elspeth fucking grindy control deck.
Yeah, right. I'm stoked. I love drawing cards. You know, I have a 60 card deck. You know, you play other decks that don't draw cards. You can probably get through like 15 cards of your library before the game ends. You know, like my control decks, I can cycle through my whole library twice if I wanted to, if the game goes long enough. And I just like that. I like playing all the cards I have in my deck. I like drawing them. You know, I just like the feeling of drawing extra cards.
Mm-hmm.
I like card advantage.
All right, okay, so wait, hold on. What's up?
No, go ahead.
Okay, I was going to say just a little tribute to our missing friend, Reich. Is he would probably want to mention this, the Eidolon of the Great Revel. Enchantment creature spirit, it's 2 red, which is sweet. I like seeing 2 red. I don't know, it excites me to see like Ash Zelt and all that stuff like that, that has like the double red casting cost. It's fun. So 2/2. Whenever a player casts a spell with converted mana cost 3 or less, Eidolon of Great Revel deals 2 damage to that player. So it includes yourself. But I think that this is a sweet little burn card also, or something like that, you know, that, like, the control decks want to counter all your shit. Well, it does 2 damage every time they want to counter something, because all the counters are 3 or less.
Yeah.
And whenever it would be double, because they play... Wait. Whenever a player casts...
No, it just does 2 damage.
Oh, 2 damage to that player. So never mind. Yeah, but it would be good for that.
So I just think that that's a sweet card. I think it's going to be in a lot of decks. I think that people want to build decks around this card. I think it's just badass. I mean, it hurts yourself, but I don't think that you really care if you can, if you're going to try to burn someone and they want to counter it, they're just going to get burned.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't really matter. So
taking
for
damage
people that don't
regardless.
Care about their, yeah. If you don't care about your own health, which this red card, red strategies don't, then this is beautiful. They can't do shit. They're going to cast their small stuff to try to get through your aggressive stuff, to like block your aggressive stuff, and they're going to be taking damage the whole time. I think it's fantastic.
I think this is a good sideboard card for
his
burn deck.
Boo, main deck. Boo.
Well, just because... So everything in like his burned in Reich's burn deck
right.
is like 3 or less for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what if he's going up against, like, green-red monsters to where they get their mana dorks out on turn one and two, and then they're just casting four drops after that?
But those mana dorks still, they still, freaking did four damage or six damage to the player. That might be enough.
Yeah, it's true, but I think...
If Flugernus is on the board, you fucking skip by him. I don't care about you. Go ahead and use him for two turns. You're going to be dead.
Yeah, I just think it in certain situations, it's just it's going to do more damage to him and not enough damage to the other player.
No, maybe, though. But I still think it's fantastic. There's probably other strategies for it I haven't really thought about too much. I was thinking, for me, because I don't really like... I like spreading the strategy out. I don't really like just playing a bunch of burn spells and calling it a deck, even though I know that it's very successful. It's just not for me. Yeah. So I'd want to put this with a proper curve and do what kind of what Knife was saying about that you want to get creatures that are bigger than the 3-mana cost. And so I could get this along with some other... A small amount of 1, 2, and 3 drops, just maybe like 12 total or something like that. And then the rest of it be 4 or greater. And just build that. Make sure that I have like the best 4 creatures. Like the Phoenixes that came out in Born of the Gods. Mm-hmm. Is that what it was? Born of the Gods?
Flame Wreath Phoenix or something?
Yeah, that one that's a 5-5. If you don't... Yeah, so anyway, like stuff like that. Yeah. Bring 4 of those on there. You know, whatever else. Any kind of like dragon you wanted to play. Maybe they can see the light of day in Standard. Maybe, I don't know. There's just bigger creatures I think that are out there that would be fine. Or like play the Fated... Was it the Fated
Conflagration?
Conflagration. Yeah, I don't know those words. Yeah. So that's a 4-mana spell. Yeah. So you can use that instead of
the damage to them.
Yeah, instead of some of the burn spells.
Yeah.
So there's ways around it. I think that you could just cast this and you could survive. I don't know. So we'll see.
Any other cards you guys are excited about or want to talk about?
Shall we talk about the best card in the set?
Is it a fucking temple?
Do they reprint Charging Badger in this set?
Yeah. Is it a temple?
Mana Confluence.
Oh, yeah,
I think that's going to be the best card in the set. I think it's going to be either the most expensive or one of the most expensive cards in the set. It's just an all-star card where any format you play, it's going to do God's work. Definitely.
I think when they reprint Soul Ring for this set, that's going to be just as good.
We already have a Soul Ring. It's called the Tension Sphere. That's exactly what it is. I'm thinking of Oblivion Ring. No, Soul Ring. Yeah.
Soul Ring. I think that's good. When that gets printed out for this set.
It's a little too powerful, I think. The power level's too high.
It's over
9,000 for sure.
Over 9,000.
But I see this card coming out and then going nowhere but up in price and play.
Pre-order your foils now. It's going to see play in Modern. It's going to see play in Standard, especially since the Shocklands are going to rotate out. We don't know yet what exactly mana fixing they're going to provide for us in M15 and the next M15 expansion sets. I just think this is perfect.
Do we think this is going to be like a $50 card eventually? Like down
I
the
think
line?
It's going to be like
this
$30,
is
going to
be like
30
plus. This is going to be as played and as efficient, but in a different way, as Mutavolt. So, although it's not going to be a man land, meaning it's not going to be able to turn into a creature, it's gonna be just as played and just as relevant to the metagame.
What about comparing it to like the Mystery Rainforest and all that kind of stuff? That's one life.
It's
I know this is one
not,
life multiple times.
It's not going to get to that level because you have to pay one life every single turn to provide mana fixing, whereas... Like a fetch land, like the Misty Rainforest, the Scalding Tarns, you pay one life once,
but
and you get your mana fixing.
My counter for that is that aren't those decks only trying to get to like turn 5 anyways?
Sometimes, yeah. In Modern and Legacy, turn 3, turn 4, kills
that's what I mean.
Pretty much.
For something like that, like yeah, you can go and look through your deck to get your dual land card or whatever the hell you want to shock yourself or whatever the fuck you want to do with it. This card, if you're going to go ahead and pay one. If you're going to pay one and then you're going to pay two to shock yourself, this is three turns of this mana that you probably won't because by later in the game, you don't need this card anymore. I don't know. I think that it's going to be very important also.
But then again, like the fetch lines provide something else than color fixing. It helps also thin your deck out, which, I mean, it's not... It takes a lot to thin your deck out pretty much, but what you do is you play like 4 or 8 fetch lands and then you play some other other land types,
And then so what you do is you draw a fetch land, you play it, you sack it, you pull out another land. So you effectively remove two lands.
I understand, yeah.
So now you're drawing more into spells rather than the lands, especially since it's a turn three, turn four. A lot of the cards only cost one or two mana to begin with.
No, that's fair, yeah.
So that's what those provide, and that's what this doesn't. But Mana Confluence is pretty much a reprint. It's a better reprint of a card called City of Brass, which we were talking about earlier. City of Brass is just you tap it to provide any color of mana, and you lose one life whenever it gets tapped. Whereas the older formats, there's a lot of things that can tap stuff, so it can really hurt you. Whereas this one, if it gets tapped, you don't lose the life.
Because you don't have to.
You still get the benefit of producing any color of mana.
Is that true? Why is that?
Because when your land, City Brass, gets tapped, you take the damage. It's the only way you take the damage is if it gets tapped. You have to tap it to provide the mana, but there's other ways if you don't have it tapped that I can tap it, and I can deal one damage to you just by tapping it. This way, if I can tap your land, you don't take the one damage. You know what I mean? So it's part of the cost to provide the mana rather than...
I understand, but if I tapped your land, you had that land and I tapped it, you would still get the mana also?
No, I don't get the mana.
Okay, I heard you say that. I must have misunderstood. Okay.
You don't get the mana
nothing
from
it taps
your
and
opponent
happens.
Tapping. Okay. Yes, but whereas City of Brass, which is, you know, sees a lot of play.
Right, no, I understand
format,
the difference now. Right.
That can matter, because like I was saying, you could be at one life, and you're playing a combo deck, and you're going to combo off, but they tap your land, and you died, and you can't do anything. Whereas this, you know, you won't be able to use it, because you're at one life, to produce mana. But at least your opponent can't kill you from your own
land. They tap it and you say, well, I will not pay the one life and I will not get my mana. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think it's going to be the best thing. You know, it's one of the best cards we see for mana fixing going forward with Shocklands rotating out. So I think it's just going to be, you know, if this card goes for pre-sale for like $15, $20.
It's already, I looked at it yesterday.
I was just looking it up right now.
So let me just make a guess then.
What was it yesterday?
I think... It was $22.
Oh wow, $17.94. Basically $18. Yeah.
So I think like around $15-$20 is a good point to get into this card because I only see it going up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? More and more people want to play it.
I feel like it'll go down before it goes up though.
Yeah.
Like most of these cards, I think that it'll come out and it will go down to like $9 and then once you start seeing it play in tournaments and how relevant it is for the meta or whatever, then it's going to do just like Master Waves and all that other shit does, you know?
Yeah.
Where they're like, oh my god, it's actually getting play. We need four of these now. Everyone needs four. Yeah. So that's
I could definitely see that. The only reason why I think it's going to go up is because of the older formats. They're already going to like it because they already have something that parallels it. It's similar, but it doesn't provide you with that extra downside. So I think they're going to play more of these and less of the other cards. And that's the only reason why I think it's going to, you know, it might, you know, the price might fluctuate during the pre-order because nobody's played with it yet. But I think that's the perfect time to buy into it because I think once somebody gets it in the hands and they start playing with it, it's just only going to go up.
Dude, what about this with like a Rakdos aggro or something like that? Where like you have like red and black one drops and then you look at your opening hand and you're like, fuck, I only have red mana, but I have a black one drop. No, now you have this, and now it doesn't matter. You can you can use it for that first drop.
Exactly.
And get the head start. That happens
a
lot.
It comes in untapped. Yeah. You only have to pay a life. When your aggro strategy, your life total doesn't really matter because you're going to kill him before you're dead anyways.
Herald Torment is like two black and a colorless. And you might not have that second black, but you want to fucking put that thing on turn three. Or you want to be like, there's that other Rakdos guy that's a 3-1 with haste for one red, one black.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Spike Jester. And you're like, I've got to get the thing out on turn two to make it work right, to make it relevant.
Yeah.
Later on, it's going to suck. Mm-hmm. So then it's hard as fuck. Like Quickness was mentioned, it's hard as fuck to get both those colors on turn two.
Yeah.
So you can have this now on an aggro strategy and always be able to get your first couple turns out of the way. And then from then on, you don't even need to use it anymore because you're going to have... enough mana, even if you only play like 20 mana or something like that, you're going to have three or four when you need it, and that's
when you
curve
get
to tops
like
out.
Four or five lands, it's the last land you tap for anything.
If you need it, you tap it, but you won't need it probably.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's cool.
Yeah, I think There's a lot of people hating on it in the comments of TCG Player. Shocker!
Hate in the comments section. And plus,
what is the world coming to?
I'm on the internet. I have no face.
And plus, I think this card has the best art on it, and it's something
the art is pretty sweet.
And it's something that I'm gonna love.
Old school.
Along with Kyrnos the God. And these are the two cards that I'm excited to actually try to get foils of. So I think the foil versions are just gonna be beautiful. They're just gonna be works of art, pretty much.
But this one guy is saying that where was it?
Pretty much at TCG right now.
Yeah, the comments in TCG. Just because I was looking up the pre-order price, but he's saying that the price won't hold, and it shouldn't see much play with the shocks. You know, still standard right now, but it'll probably. The price will raise after rotation.
That's totally
reasonable. And also dependent on what other type of dual lands we get, you know. But I still think this card's going to be at least
I think that 10 after
bucks.
Rotation we have enough. We have a lot of scry lands, we have Nykthos, and we have this.
There's still
how much more land is allowed to be in the meta for standard. They're going to print something next time. But I don't know what else they need for this block. We're good for now.
For this block.
Wizards can't do too much. They can't just keep throwing all these different lands at us.
Because we have three dual lands. We have gates, we have temples, and we have shocks. So I think that's perfect because it allows you to have three color decks and reliably cast your spells on card. If you only have shocks plus the man confluence, I don't think three color decks are going to be a thing. You're only going to have monocolor and two color decks.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you won't have enough dual color sources to reliably cast.
Yeah,
all
you
your
only
spells
have like
on
four
turn.
Or
yeah.
You know,
so
four
like
to eight,
you look a lot of mana bases in the decks today. They have 12 to 16 dual lands.
Yes.
Just to be able to provide the mana on turn, to cast your spells. So I think there's definitely going to be at least maybe another or two cycles of dual lands coming out.
I think the next block, I think there's definitely going to be dual lands.
But you said, for this set right now, for this standard right now, they can't print any more dual lands because there's just going to be too many. Mm-hmm. And then you can go into four color decks, and stuff like that.
Is Mana Confluence going to replace your Lantern in your Chromatica
deck? It kind of has to. But luckily I have till November to not worry about that.
Yeah.
But the Lantern is it's really important. You know what I mean?
No, I mean would you...
Well,
once this comes out, is it going to immediately replace it?
I wouldn't.
No?
No.
I don't know.
You need five lands to cast Chromanticore, right?
There's other ways to get
mana ramp into it.
But you don't really need that necessarily because there is Karametra's whatever, the Karametra's Bounty or whatever it is that turns a creature into any color. It's only one mana.
Yeah.
The Lantern does a lot more work than just one.
Yeah,
it's harder
to say.
It's
harder to remove artifacts.
It fixes all your mana, plus it ramps you, because you can tap the Chromatic Lantern itself to provide mana.
Yes, exactly.
Mana.
So this
that's
one is just one for one, and that one is fucking six for one.
Chromatic Lantern
is
definitely way better than this right now for that type of deck. But once Chromatic Lantern rotates out, I think that will be definitely a good replacement for
I hope they have something else. I even liked the Dark Steel something or other, the Dark Steel Argot or whatever it is.
Ingot or something
that. Yeah, the indestructible, you pay three indestructible
and it produces one color mana.
Of any color or whatever. I think that's pretty cool. I mean I think we just need something more powerful than that.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what one of these things is, you know. I know it's an artifact and it costs three, but if you just are interested in one mana, then I don't know. I don't think it's that big a deal for a deck like that. I'm looking, when I think about it, I think about the aggro and stuff like that. I think that's pretty important.
Are there any other cards that you guys are excited about?
I don't know. God, I don't know.
We could save some for next. Oh, obviously there'll be more spoilers.
Yeah, this is the 5.5. This is our little in-between episode because we felt that if we did it later, first of all, we'd have to cover a whole fucking set by next podcast.
Which
would be a pain in the ass. You can see how long we talked about just this 50 cards we have right now or whatever. Also, we don't want the time to pass so far that people are not interested in the spoilers anymore. You know, it's fun to do it as they come out rather than the set is all released and then we talk about it. You know, I kind of like doing it like this. This is more fun. We're still speculating a little bit.
So I want to briefly, or are we done with spoilers?
Okay, one more thing. Wait, did you already say it? Gnarl Scarhide?
No.
Did you talk about that? It's a one mana, it's a 2/1, gnarled, Scarhide, can't block, and it's a bestow for 4, enchanted creature gets +2/+1 and can't block. The thing is, it's a fucking Minotaur one drop.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Minotaur one drop.
You finally get your one
drop. Finally get a Minotaur one drop.
Minotaur's the thing.
Yeah,
you Minotaur don't give a shit about blocking anyways.
Who cares? So I think it's sick. It's probably not going to get bestowed barely at all. I just think that it's sick. Nice. There's Rakdos, the Cacklers or whatever, which are great, but this thing will be great late game too when I bring out stuff that gives it +1/+1 and trample and +2/+0 and all this other stuff. The Rakdos Cackler was a bummer because I just had to use it. It wasn't like synergistic. So that's a stupid thing to get excited about, but I'm buying 4.
I didn't even realize it was a fucking Minotaur. Nice.
It's weird art too. It's crazy.
I like art. It. It kind of has the stump. It's all
Yeah.
Weird.
There's one card I actually wanted to talk about that I'm really stoked about. Of course it's blue because it's my favorite color. But Sigild Starfish.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in love with this card. I'm on the Starfish bandwagon. It's 1 and a blue for a 0/3. You tap it, and you scry 1. I mean, like, it's a good defender in blue for any aggro strategies. You know, blue really wants to help set up its draws because, it's really weak to creatures and bigger creatures, so you have to make sure you have the correct answers to every one of their threats.
So are you talking about really for, like, limited or, like, standard?
I say limited, both. But he's saying both.
Because wouldn't the 1/3, what's the 2
the drop? Omen Speaker?
Yeah, wouldn't Omen Speaker, because you immediately get benefit from it and you don't have to wait to tap it. Because you play this guy, you have to wait a turn to tap it, and then you have to wait another turn to tap it again, so essentially
You waited three turns.
Yeah.
Where Omen Speaker, you immediately scry 2, and it has 1 attack.
Yeah.
You know, which, I mean, sometimes it's relevant, but usually it's not.
Yeah, I'm not too concerned about the power. I'm more concerned about the toughness, but I just like the fact that it's recurring. Like,
yeah.
I can keep scrying. Like, I can tap this guy on my upkeep, and I can set up my draw step.
Yeah, that's true.
You know
it
I
is
mean?
Sick. It's a good card. I mean, if you did play it in standard, I'd be like, that's fine. I mean, I don't see...
I mean, obviously it's going to die to a lot of things, but...
But the thing is, if people are going to worry about killing your 0/3, like...
Exactly.
Hey, that's not too bad.
If you want to spend a Bolt of Keranos on my Starfish, by all means, go ahead. You effectively spent 1 more mana on a creature that's really, you know... It does stuff, but it's not like...
It
a
does
powerhouse.
Stuff.
Dude, you want to... You want to bolt somebody's starfish? Like, that's just wrong. Am I the only one that finds that funny?
I know where you're going there. I know.
Buttholes! I'm talking about buttholes!
But anyways, I like it. Plus, it's a starfish. Like, you don't see starfish. It's not really a creature type. And, you know, now it's a creature type. So maybe we can get some... Starfish tribal stuff.
Okay, yeah. They're all defender fucking O-whatevers. O-12, her fucking legendary creature.
They did just release a centaur tribal lord.
I saw that, the +1/+1
yes,
and trample.
All their centaurs get +1/+1 and trample. So, you know, when you see stuff like that, you think, like, you want to start thinking about it's actually going to be a creature type that's going to come out quite often.
Yeah, be relevant.
Why else would you do that just for one set? You know, there's other tribal lords, like, Merfolk is definitely the one off the top of my head. It's the biggest one, you know, sees a lot of play in all the other formats. Not really now, because there's not really any good Merfolks, but, you know, whenever you see tribal lords, you're going to want to think, you know, like the Minotaurs. You know, Minotaurs had a tribal lord, and you start seeing more and more Minotaurs that come along and you can make a deck, so,
yeah, I still think we're going to see, like, 1 or 2 more Minotaurs in this deck, too, or in this set.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think they definitely, with the amount of Minotaurs they want to push, especially since it is a good limited deck as well, I definitely foresee some more Minotaurs coming out.
So, anything else before we move on? Anything else?
I mean, I could talk about all these cards, honestly.
I don't think so. Let me just kind of browse.
We are at, like, 2 hours. I didn't know... Like, I figured, yeah, we could talk about this for an hour, but no, we went pretty fucking in
depth. It's good.
The only one I would want to talk about is Spidamogus, which I think is a really good card. It's costs one red for a sorcery. Spidamogus deals damage to the target creature equal to the number of instant sorcery cards in your graveyard, scry one.
So, that would be good for the Izzet deck, probably.
Exactly. Yeah, Izzet or Burn, something like that. Play just a bunch of instant sorceries. You know, it's a good way to remove big creatures because you're going to have a bunch of them in your graveyard anyways.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool.
So, I just one card to mention. I don't think it's going to be a powerhouse, but it's definitely going to be a role player in a lot of decks.
So, are we trying to get onto M15? Is that what you're trying to do?
Yeah, I know. I've mentioned how I'm kind of excited for Waste Knot, which is a card that's spoiled in M15. They already spoiled it.
We talked about it last time.
Yeah, we talked about it last time. If you don't know what it is, it's one in a black for an enchantment. Whenever an opponent discards a card, depending on what type of card it is, I get something for whatever they disenchant or whatever they discard. So last night I just went on a tangent about trying to like build the deck with what the cards we have now, which is dumb because cards are going to be replaced and whatever. But I just tried to like think like as soon as M15 comes out, I want to have a deck ready to just like jam it in and go to FNMs.
Oh, dude, jamming decks.
Just jamming decks. Dude.
Jamming them D's.
Jamming them D's. So, the deck is called Waste Not What Your Deck Can Do For You.
Oh my god.
And, so basically, it's a discard. You like that? It's a discard, fucking deck. So I have the four Waste Knots. And I haven't, like, whittled down, you know, to just 60 cards, but this is what I have in mind. Four Duresses.
Yep.
You know, you look for a non-creature, non-land card, and they have to discard it.
Thoughtseize?
Four Thoughtseize.
Of course.
Four Thoughtseize.
You're playing black, you're playing Thoughtseize.
Just doing the easy work right now.
Yeah, yeah.
I have two Mind Rots.
Yeah, right. Good.
Because...
hit lands.
It's not super relevant when they don't have any cards in their hand. So yeah. I could just be stuck with a Mind Rot, you know, and it's cost three to discard two cards.
And it can hit lands. And that's the most part, because Waste Knot does have one where if they discard a land, you do receive something.
Exactly.
Because there's not a lot of... don't really like land destruction or anything to deal with your lands, because it's not fun for people, especially newer players. So, yeah.
So I've always wanted to play this card, but it's just... they fucked up Cypher so bad to where it's just not playable.
That six drop you're talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Under City Plague. So it's...
you discard your hand.
It's a six drop. It's a sorcery. Four black. Target player loses one life, discards a card, then sacrifices a permanent. And it has Cypher, so attach it to a creature.
I own four if you want. You want
to check them out. Didn't they have a Cypher one where you have to discard your hand?
Let me get to that young Padawan.
All right. Getting a little ahead of myself.
So the Undercity Plague, that's just the one of just, it's probably going to be replaced. You know, it's not too feasible, but I just want to play it so bad. Okay, so the one Aquickness was talking about, Whispering Madness.
Yes, that's the one.
And if I could click on it, I would tell you exactly what the text says. Okay, Whispering Madness. It's two blue-black. Each player discards his or her hand, then draws cards equal to the greatest number of cards a player discarded in this way. And it has Cypher. So basically, if I have five cards and you have four cards, and I play this card, we each discard our hands, and then we each draw five since I had the most cards in my hand at the time of discard.
Five after casting a Whispering Madness.
Five after casting it.
Yeah.
So... That's a lot of discarding.
Yes.
And so I fucking play it, and then hopefully I can cipher it on something that can get through with damage immediately. So that's one thing I really liked about Cypher. If I already had a creature that could attack, see, I play this, I get the effect of it, and then I put it on that creature that can get through for sure, and I get to cast the card again for free. So I definitely miss... Invisible Stalker, because this would be good for that. But Invisible Stalker was hexproof, unblockable 1/1.
You have the 1/1 in Journey that's unblockable as well.
What's that?
It's like Flare Step Eidolon or something like that.
Oh, yes, yes. That's, so you
have
that's
that, that'd be a good one. And like even with Whispering Madness, like if you have a Waste Knot, even if you just cast it and you can't cipher it,
yeah, it's
you're
totally
still getting a
fine.
Ton of benefit out of it.
And,
so
or even if I just, you know, cipher it to some shitty creature that might not get through, they're still fear, they still have to hold a fucking creature back because they don't want that creature getting through to trigger the cipher again. And then so also I have, obviously, like, you know, 4 Watery Graves, 4 Temples, Swamps and Islands. But for creatures, Drainpipe Vermin. Nobody knows.
Is that that rat guy?
That's the rat guy.
Is that the 5 drop?
Nope.
No, that's
like
2 drop.
1/1 that discards or something.
So
like
it's
that.
A 1 drop for 1 black. It's a 1/1. When Drainpipe Vermin dies, you may pay black. If you do, target player discards
a card. Yeah, okay.
So that's just, you know.
That's still legal?
It's in Return to Ravnica.
Okay.
So these cards, once the new set comes out after M15, a lot of these cards are going away.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is strictly for that, like, 3-month period when M15.
Everything's legal?
Yeah, everything's legal. It's just, like, madness. So that's good just for the. Have something to do on turn one, and I might be able to get some benefit out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I have 3 Liliana's Reavers, which came out in M14.
Yep.
They're 2 black-black. It's a 4/3 zombie with Death Touch. And then whenever it deals combat damage to a player, that player discards a card, and I put a 2/2 black zombie creature token on the battlefield tapped.
Perfect.
So just another way. It has Death Touch, so hopefully it can.
It's a good blocker.
It's a good blocker, and if it gets through, then boom.
Yeah.
It can, you have to discard a card. And then, which I think might be the all-star of the deck. Not maybe the all-star, but I think it's gonna do a lot of work, is Siren of the Silent Song. It's a 2/1 flyer for 1 blue-black. It has Inspired. Whenever, it becomes untapped, each player discards a card, then puts the top card of his or her library in his or her hand. Or each opponent discards a card, and then they mill one. Which the mill one, I don't give a shit about.
It's an added benefit.
Yeah, exactly. So,
That dog.
That dog for sure.
Them dogs, though. And then, so I have... Shut up. So I have 3 Far and Aways.
Deal with, like, pesky stuff,
To deal with pesky stuff, but it's also, it's just a reliable way to get stuff back in their hand so I can discard it.
Yeah.
Because what if they have permanents on the board, no cards in hand? So Far and Away, it's one of those fuse cards. The far side is return target creature to its owner's hand, and the away side is target player sacrifices a creature. So it clears the board up a little bit, and if they have an empty hand, it puts something in their hand, so I can then play a Thoughtseize or Mind Rot or whatever it is.
Yeah. And now we just talked about that one blue mana card where you get to return an enchantment with Strive.
Exactly.
In your hand. I'm not saying that's going to be better. I'm just saying that's not a bad idea. Either.
Yeah, and I also have 3 Cyclonic Rifts. Because just
you can overload it.
Yeah, and, once again, even if it's
madness.
Even if it's just one turn,
I like it.
Or even if it's just one permanent, I'm overloading it. I still get to put something back in their hand from the battlefield and then have them discard it
and then play like Whispering Madness or something.
Exactly. And then the
a bomb,
the linchpin to the whole deck. You guys might remember this card from my rat deck, and everybody hated me for it. Shrieking Affliction. It's just 1 black, you know.
For an enchantment.
Yeah, for an enchantment, it's probably nothing. At the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, if that player has 1 or fewer cards in hand, he or she loses 3 life.
Yeah.
Boom. So that's...
That's like the biggest win condition you have, right?
Yeah, that's the biggest win condition. So basically, once I get your hand down to nothing and you're just top decking... Like, you're just constantly taking 3. Hopefully I'll have some fucking zombies out on the board from Waste Knot, because when you discard a creature card, I get a 2/2 zombie. And so I'm just kind of just slowing you down and just
grinding
2/3-ing you to death.
Have you considered I think it's called Spiteful Return? It came out in the Journey of the Nyx. It's an enchantment creature.
Is that the one where when you attack?
Whenever they draw a card, it deals damage to them.
Hmm. Yes, I did.
Which would be good.
No, that's not Spiteful Return. It's
Spiteful Return is the one that you lose 2 life.
Oh, yeah, okay. When you attack, you lose 2 life. You're talking about I forget what the name is, but it's a hag creature it is. I did think about that one. There's a couple other cards like I want to put in here, but there's not enough room. And then this, I forgot this was even a fucking card.
Mm.
Soul Ransom. 2 blue and a black. Enchant creature. You control enchanted creature. So let's say, you know, they actually get something on the board, and I'm like, shit, you know, that's gonna do some damage to me. I can fucking get it from them. So, the rest of the text says, discard 2 cards, Soul Ransom's controller sacrifices it, then draws 2 cards. Only an opponent may activate this ability. So basically, I enchant your creature. If you want it back, you're going to have to discard 2 cards just to kill it. Yeah. Or, not, you don't even get it back. Just to kill it, you discard 2 cards.
Mm-hmm.
So, feeding my discard, and then they draw 2 cards, which also helps me so I can just fucking discard their hand again with Mind Rot or whatever it is. I was thinking about trying to put some Quickens in, just so I could cast some sorceries at instant speed.
The Soul Ransom, when it says Soul Ransom's controller sacrifices it, does that mean the actual enchantment or the creature itself? Because I think the way it's worded, it says you sacrifice the enchantment.
Right, so they get it back.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's how it's worded. I'm not sure. You know, like we were saying, it's not a card that like a lot of people play. Sees a lot of play, but
yeah, discard 2 cards. Discard 2 cards.
Soul Ransom's controller. So it's talking about Soul Ransom itself sacrificing.
Oh, so they do get the creature back.
Yes.
Okay, but still, I mean,
you're still getting the discard effect. You're still getting the benefits from your Waste Knight. Yeah, a zombie or whatever.
So they discard 2 cards. I sacrifice the enchantment.
Mm-hmm.
And then they draw 2 cards.
No. You draw 2 cards.
No, because then, this is...
So Soul Ransom's controller sacrifices, then draws 2 cards.
Oh. Well, fuck. This is... Okay, well, I'm glad... See, I'm glad I talked to you guys about this shit.
Yeah.
See, this is just a card nobody ever fucking played. I think I saw it once, like, in a practice room or something online. But yeah, so this is great. I don't care if you get your fucking creature back because I'll have chump blockers for days, hopefully.
So, you know, you can draw your 2 cards, you draw it far and away, you bounce it back to the hand, you Thoughtseize it from the 2 cards you got. You got far and away and a Thoughtseize, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this even works out better than I anticipated. So this, I mean, there's other creatures like the one from Theros where, you look, opponent reveals cards equal to your devotion to black. Disciple of Phoenix. But I just don't have a lot of permanents on the board.
Yeah.
I could put them in there just because of Soul Ransom and Waste Knot and stuff like that. But I just, whatever. You know, I have other ways to get shit out of your hand. So, I mean, this is like my build as of right now. And I'm totally excited to play it. I'm going to get all the cards ready so I can just drop in Waste Knots.
As M15 pre-order comes out, you pre-order some Waste Knots.
Oh, I'm definitely pre-ordering them. As soon as I get them, I'm going to Friday Night Magic and just fucking shit up. Hopefully.
Catching everybody off guard.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody will suspect it except for the thousands of other people who have the same exact idea I have.
Or people who listen to this podcast.
Ah, crap. I'm going to have to edit that all out. Now they're going to know. Oh.
All your plans are foiled.
Yeah. So that's it for spoilers for now, I guess.
We're like halfway through Journey in the Nyx, I think, with the spoilers.
Because the pre-release is at the end of the month. Once again, we all should go.
I'm definitely down to go.
It should be during the day, so hopefully Hot Sauce can go and Wright can join us. On the weekend, so
and keeping on the theme with spoilers and, you know, the pre-release and stuff like that, based on what you guys seen so far, because the whole thing is when you go to the pre-release, you pick a color. You get a seeded pack of cards that are kind of that color, and then you get some boosters, and then you make a sealed deck and you play and you do all that. What color are you guys looking to champion, pretty much? For this pre-release, like based on what cards you've seen,
like, you know, they've spoiled more blue than anything. So, like, a lot more blue. Like, there's like probably 5.
Yeah,
more
they
cards
spoiled most.
Just
of
so
blue
you know,
probably,
but
I mean that doesn't mean like you know the cards that in blue are that powerful.
You're absolutely right.
You know what I mean? So you can.
So what color would we go with? I'm saying either white or black.
Why?
White, just because, dude, look at all these fucking awesome white cards. Yeah, like yeah. I said, I don't like piloting the fucking white heroic deck. I don't like it. It's not particularly fun, and I know it just beats up on shit, but I don't know. I think I get, like, too nervous, because I'm like, dude, if they, like, just fucking board wipe or, like, something, like, they could just blow out, yeah. Like, you know, it's so hinged on if they have removal. But
you
it
know,
just...
You should be used to that by now, playing my control deck, because, you know, you kind of have to sandbag your hand when you're playing a control
deck. See, exactly, that's why I'm constantly in fear of the board wipe. I felt it too much, yeah. And so, but definitely white looks... as of right now, and just white in Theros and Born of the Gods is good.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
probably the best color in this block.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just such a sucker for black, trying to make it work. And like these black cards aren't even all that great. Like even the King Makkar, the Golden Cursed or whatever, or the Gold Curse, gold. You know, he's two black for a 2/3. That can just die to fucking Bolt of Karanos or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, I'd love to make it work, but I don't know. I hope yeah. Farika is good so I can be like black green or whatever, but, and there's some other black cards that are kind yeah. of exciting.
Seems like black, you have to have a lot of, setup.
Yeah.
To make black work. You know, a lot of the black cards are very, synergistic
yeah.
with other cards, but it requires a huge setup cost.
Yeah. And I'm a sucker for trying to do like the whole black blue control,
mm-hmm.
which isn't like the super best right now, which I still play it, you know, in drafts online and stuff.
Yeah.
I know like how to pilot it, so that is points in my favor. But yeah, so it'll either be white or black, and plus Athreos is yeah. cool, and I feel...
Being able to pull an Athreos or a Frieza in your seeded pack, you know?
Yeah, well I think there's the seeded packs are predetermined, so there's set, like, combinations, so...
But they try to include the cards that
yeah.
are in your color in that, so
yeah, exactly.
those could be in the randomized portion
yeah, exactly.
of that seeded
so,
pack.
Yeah, exactly, so, you know, like I did pull the Bow of Nylea mm-hmm. in the Theros seeded pack when we did the pre-release. So, I mean, there can be some super really good
yeah.
cards in the seeded pack. But yeah, those would be my colors. What about you guys?
What about you, Hot Sauce?
I don't know. It's kind of hard to say. I mean, I'm looking through them all, and they all have their own strengths and weaknesses
mm-hmm.
or whatever else.
Well, what excites you the most?
Green
yeah.
and blue.
Green and blue?
Green and blue, probably. I mean, everything has good and bad stuff in it, but so far there's more blue exposed, so, like, there's more flexibility in blue.
Yeah.
They have, like, big creatures, they have, like, little control-type stuff, they have that scry, starfish, they have, like, a lot of just different things. White, they only have spoiled, like, 5 cards, like, I can't say anything about that, even though I want to say white, because white is always powerful and limited, I think, except for, like, when we get M14, but... Yeah. But green has also, what they need, like, they have... the fight thing, they have the fight instant, they have the card draw 2/2, you know, when the constellation one.
Yeah.
So they have some stuff that green really needs, and if you have those, they're already going to have just regular bodies that are 4/4s and whatever else. So I think right now,
green's more
green's
like
for me,
needs more utility stuff rather than just big creatures.
Right. I think there already are big creatures,
yeah.
and so I think that. I don't know if I'd draft it for sure, but so far I think it looks pretty awesome. So,
yeah.
What about you?
I love blue. I really love blue. Blue is my color. But I think I'm going to have to go white this turn. Because I think white in this block is just so powerful that, like, it's so powerful and it's so diverse.
Oh, you're saying for the block? I was thinking just, like, only for this will they spoil.
Well, because they do, the pre-release, block. You're going to have one seeded pack for Journey in the Nyx in your color, so it's going to put
right.
most of the color, the cards in that pack of your chosen color.
Right, I was
and then you're going to have, like, what is it? You're going to have one seeded pack, you're going to have one Journey in the Nyx booster, and then I think two Born of the Gods and two Theros.
Okay.
So you make a seal.
No, then I would change mine. I would not choose green for that.
What would you choose then?
I'd probably choose white.
White, yeah. I think white's so powerful.
You're guaranteed also to get the, like, the promo card.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever the, you know, the Doomwake Giant or Spawn of,
That 2/4, the white's a 2/4 flyer with lifelink.
Yeah. With heroic. And heroic, which is one
huge. Like, the red one, I laugh at the red one where it's a 5/5/4/7, and it deals damage equal to the number of basic, mountains. You control when it enters the battlefield.
Well, not basic mountains, but just mountains.
Well, mountains, yeah, but when we don't have the shock lands in the block.
Yeah.
Why do you laugh at that?
Because, I mean...
Because every dragon is very powerful, it just costs way too much.
I know, but, like, in order to get any benefit from the enter the battlefield effect, you're gonna have to play mono red. And I don't think mono red's a thing.
Okay. Or, like, heavy, heavy red.
Yeah, I don't see it other than a 5/5/7 mm-hmm. that's flying, and that's just way too much.
Yep.
The blue one, you know, it's kind of cool. You know, when it enters the battlefield, you return opponent's creatures that are have converted mana cost less, or no, with toughness less than how many islands you control. Which I can see a thing. You're mostly when you're in blue, you're mostly base blue. Which would be good. You can bounce, like, you know, things that have 4 toughness on it reliably, I think. The black one's good. It requires a little more work to make it good. But I think there's a lot of good, utility spells in the block to help, get it to where it needs to be. And then,
the green one is just meh.
The green one is just what green is. It's big stuff with counters that you can put more counters on stuff, so.
So you would choose white?
I think I would choose white.
We all agree.
Yeah,
pretty much. For the first time of our whole lives.
Yeah. White is just so powerful in this block that, like, it's kind of hard to choose anything else. Unless it's, like, your pet color, you know. Even, like, my blue is my color, but, you know, even then I can't ignore the fact that white is just so much stronger, and then I can use blue cards to support it.
Okay, you know, since this is a, you know, not a complete episode, even though we are like two and a half hours or something. We're gonna do a quick noob's knowledge. So for the pre-release, if you go to your pre-release and like white is probably, a lot of people are gonna be going for the white packs. When me and a quickness went to the Theros, we showed up like 15 minutes before, 20 minutes before or something, and the place was already packed. And people had already bought up all the black pre-release packs. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to get the black, and I couldn't get it because they were all gone, so I had to pick, like, green. You know? Yeah. So if you, like, white is probably going to be the one everyone's going to pick. So get there early so you can get the color you want, or you're going to be stuck with, like, red. Or fucking, you know, whatever the least favorite color is at your local shop. So get there early so you can get your color. Make sure you get your color. And then,
you know, show up like an hour early, buy your colored pack, and then, you know, grab something to eat, come back, and then go ahead and play your sealed.
Yeah. So, this was longer than I expected. I mean, it was a good conversation.
Oh, yeah.
But it always surprises me how much we can just fucking talk about magic.
Gap.
Yeah. But, you know, this is gonna wrap it up for this special episode of If Lands Could Kill. Shout out to Reich, who's probably doing laundry right now or something, or feeding the dog. I'm Knife City.
I'm a quickness.
I'm Hot Sauce.
My name's Reich. I'm doing laundry. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for listening. Later.
Hey! Diversifying the podcast.
Yeah, can I borrow my stuff to podcast with you guys?
Okay.
A book and a sweater.
You were that bored in there, huh?
Okay, so.
Do you want to get us started?
Are you guys getting started yet?
Yeah.
So this is Mihar.
Oh, family, my name's Mihar.
You guys recording right now?
We're recording.
We only bring him in because of, there's some
affirmative action.
Yeah, podcast affirmative action.
The law says we need to have every
creed.
Yeah, I guess you could say.
Color and creed.
Sick.
Alright guys, I'm out of here. You guys are all lame.
Alright.
Well, we know that.
Cool guys though.
Oh.
See if my car starts.
What? What's wrong with you guys? What's wrong with your fucking card? Alright, who cares?
He stole it.
I don't even need to know the answer. I don't care. I told you already.